fun and games, games and fun. Now it's over.
No need to run.
You really outdid yourself with that guy.
Bill, he is scary.
Are we ready to embark on the adventure of our lives?
Yeah!
Let's do it, man! Oh, all right, everybody.
This place is gigantic. I never even made it to the top floor.
Let's play hide and go seek.
Fuck, 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 huh? Just like little rabbits.
You were done in about 10 seconds.
So I was just nervous. Everyone's running around everywhere.
Randy! Randy!
Who took my clothes?
Anybody here?
Yeah, what's wrong?
It's me and Bonnie. Something's going on. Something weird. Bonnie says she saw somebody else in here.
Hey, you guys, we're calling the police.
Who the hell are you?
I don't understand.
John, if you're doing this, I'm warning you.
Hi, this is Laura Park Lincoln from Friday the 13th, Part 7, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to episode 65, I believe. And this time we're going on a shopping trip, aren't we? Without further ado, I welcome you to our fellow showroom dummies. Eric, it's your choice. How are you doing?
I'm not going on a shopping trip. I'm just going to have sex in a furniture shop.
Okay.
I have no intention of buying anything, though.
Right. And what have you picked for us this time?
Oh, it is, of course, Hide and Go Shriek from, 1988, I think, although some sources say 87.
Okay. Well, that's...
And by some sources, I mean The Hysteria Lives.
Right. Well, I think that was when it was made, but you have some background. We can have a mass debate about that later.
We can, yes.
Yes. So, Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, but Justin, I say it's over and now you kill people?
I know, it's a bit of an overreaction, perhaps, but but yes, we shall get on some classic dialogue and also some interesting sexual politics a little bit later. Joseph, how are you?
Oh, yeah.
It's back.
It's back.
Oh, and Justin, just to correct you, this is episode 63.
Oh, is it? Yes. You're right. I can't read my own writing. That's okay. Mm. No, you're right. 63. We'll be on to the hallowed 69 before you know it, won't we? We are going to have to pick something appropriate for that.
Yes.
So answers on a postcard or suggestions on a postcard.
Something from the Spanish supermarket, I'd reckon.
Possibly, yes.
Maybe anal paprika.
Although that's a really fancy. Three. One, two, or three?
I don't know which one's my favorite. Three, I think, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Well, four is in production. You should see what they're doing with an Xbox.
Yes. Okay. Only on The Hysteria Continues. So, yes, this time we're off to lock ourselves away in a furniture shop with big hair and have sex and die a little bit later. We're also going to be doing a quick quiz, which Joseph has put together, which we're all gagging for because apparently we've got some anagrams and we all hate those. But... We understand that's only one round, isn't it, Joseph?
Yes, that is one round. And Eric, yes. Ivan Drago from Rocky IV says, you will lose.
Well, he can kiss my shiny ass.
Well, his is shiny. You should see that movie. It's very oiled.
Yeah, I did see Rocky IV in the cinema when I was very, very, very young. I think I was about two. So I do recall the shininess, yeah.
Well, I find that funny because yesterday when we were recording the commentary, I made a Rocky IV reference and you didn't pick up on it. You said that you had no idea what that meant.
Yeah, because Eric. I saw Rocky IV 25 years ago.
I don't care.
When you were two, you're not 27, yeah. Eric. This is all lies, isn't it?
It's a sort of web of lies.
It's a web of lies.
Yeah.
Why must you fill this podcast full of lies?
And talking
eyes make baby Jesus cry.
Yes. just so people aren't confused, Joseph, do you want to tell us what we were recording yesterday? Because we're allowed to now, aren't we?
Oh, yes. We were recording the commentary track for Night Train to Terror. Vinegar Syndrome is releasing that. I'm not sure when, but soon. So be on the lookout for that.
Yes. And we hear lots about Eric's past as a breakdancer, don't we, on that? So it's definitely worth buying to find out.
And his hairy 666 chest.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, we've got the Fiendish Quiz, Joseph's Fiendish Quiz, coming up. yes. On a feature presentation. But before we start, we might as well go on to the usual thing, which is recently seen. So, Nathan, do you want to tell us what you've been watching recently?
I don't have much. I watched The Conjuring.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Which I really, really loved. And a lot of the reviews I'm reading for it, you know, most of them are bashing it for not being anything new. But, I mean, I'm fine with that. I mean, come on, I'm a slasher fan, so what do I care if, like, they put original spin on it? I mean, it's just it's a ghost story. It's nothing you guys haven't seen before. But, I mean, they do it with, you know, minimal CGI, I think, and just lots of jump scares. So, I mean, that's all I could ask for.
Mm. Because it's not opened here yet. I think it opens on Friday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it opens on Friday. Okay.
Yeah, so we haven't seen it. It's normally, more recently, we've been getting films at the same time as the States, but for some reason we haven't with this. But yeah, no, it's done really well, isn't it? It was, up until the weekend, number one film in America, wasn't it?
Yes.
For the last couple of weeks, so it's going to be...
It made $40 million on its opening weekend. I believe it was budgeted at 30 or 20, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
10, maybe 10. One of those.
I think it was 20, I think.
Yeah, 20, yeah. But so expect a sequel, obviously. Yeah.
Well, there's Insidious Chapter 2, isn't there, coming out soon? With, what's his name?
Patrick Wilson.
Patrick Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Insidious sequel.
Are you? Or are you being sarcastic?
No, I am. I love the first Insidious. I think a lot of people didn't like it, but I was the one who, you know, I loved it. I've seen it like a couple of times.
Mm. No, I'm really looking forward to seeing The Conjuring. It definitely, I'll report back when myself and Eric get a chance to see it. I imagine you'll be. When's it being released in Dublin, Eric?
It's been released in Dublin on Friday as well.
Okay.
Although a colleague of mine went to a press screening last week and she said it was very good.
Okay, yeah.
And the budget for it, I'm just looking at IMDb, was $13 million, so it's made its budget back three times over in its first weekend in the States. So that's a success.
Yes, so I expect expect to see lots of low-budgeted horror ghost movies coming out soon.
Yeah. I wonder if The Asylum have one coming out called The Magic King or something.
It'd be The Conjured.
Yes.
Yeah. Good one. Good one.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nathan. Is there anything else you've been watching?
I haven't got to watch it yet, but just so you guys know, I got the new Boarding House DVD, and it features the director's cut, which runs 2 hours and 37 minutes long.
The mind Yoinks. Boggles.
And it's amazing.
But you haven't seen it yet.
How do you know?
Yeah, but I already know it's going to be.
Oh, with your mystic powers.
I watched a little bit of it last night. I just wasn't able to watch it because I got home so late.
What's the running time of the version we reviewed a few podcasts ago?
I think it's a little over 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah, so over an extra hour nearly of...
Yeah, and so far, what I noticed is it's just got a lot of extra stuff with like the girls, and you get a lot more backstory about them. You know, and we all wanted that.
Yes. Was that a yawn I heard somewhere or somebody?
It sounded like Joseph yawning.
No, that was me gasping at how awesome.
All right.
And also, it's got the alternate ending, which it features Jim covered in Band-Aids after his telekinetic battle the night before. yeah. He's actually got like three giant Band-Aids on his face. And Victoria comes in and says, "Do you want some tea?" And he says, "Yes." So she pours tea, and then they sit there with it's definitely not scripted, because you can tell. It's just talking about what happened the night before with, Debbie attacking them. And it's just them, you know, talking very aimlessly, like, "Yeah, she was strong. Yes, she was. It took two of us. Yeah, I know. I was there." Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's right.
And the Oscar goes to.
That's it's and almost like the missing ending to Friday the 13th Part 3. It's at that level.
And finally, the alternate ending ends with like this real estate agent, because, you know, as you know, Jim went on to be a scientist for NASA, and Victoria went on to be hot RCA property. So they don't have the house anymore. And at the end, the real estate agent's trying to unload the house where all this haunted stuff happens. And there's a knock at the door, and it's like the killer. And she introduces herself as a different woman looking to buy the house, and it goes off.
I can see why they didn't use that ending.
I can't.
I love their aimless chatter, though, because, I mean, yeah, it was seriously like, yeah, that's true.
And how many dollars
Deborah
did you...
Hoffman.
How many dollars did you splash out on this epic director's 20. Cut? Oh, okay, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Right, well, who knows, we might return to boarding house someday.
No, I don't want to.
I want you guys to know that if they had released this before I chose it for an episode, I would have... had to be sure that we all watch the director's cut version.
Okay, well, thankfully we've dodged that bullet.
Damn. That's it for me.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you, Nathan. Joseph, how about you?
Well, last night we hung out with Grant and watched a low-budget film called Under the Bed. It was shot on digital with a wide lens, and I really liked it. Some of the acting in it is not great. The kids are actually really good. It centers around this boy who, I guess when he was a child, he had these, run-ins with this monster under the bed, you know, one of those childhood fears. So he gets sent off to his, I believe it's his aunt's house or some halfway house, something like that. But anyway, he comes back a few years later to kind of, you know, face his demons, as it were. And the only one who really believes him is his younger brother. So they kind of, face this demon, or lack thereof, head on. And, you know, his parents or anyone at school doesn't believe him. And I really liked it. The actors playing the parents were, kind of flat, and or in case of the father, they overacted a lot. And it kind of takes you out of it. But overall, it's very ambitious. The direction is just incredible. The a lot of great compositions, some really great shots. The cinematography is excellent. For that alone, I had to give it a 6 because it's really one of the more striking films I've seen lately. And a lot of good practical effects. Not going to spoil anything, but I would say, yeah, seek it out. It's a good one-time watch. Like I said, low budget, but very ambitious.
Okay, well, sounds good. You watched that, did you, Nathan?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I do think it's one of those films that, has a tendency to drag a little bit, like in the middle. But like Joseph said, the direction is really, really good. And, I kind of like the fact that it plays on that whole childhood fear of something under your bed.
Hmm. Okay, no, it sounds good. Excellent. Anything else, Joseph?
Yes, I watched a film called Evidence, which is half of a real movie and half of a found... Well, it's more like 80% found footage and 20% normal film. It stars Stephen Moyer from True Blood. That's Bill from True Blood. Basically, he's a detective, and there's this... roadside, like, junkyard where a brutal massacre kind of takes place and an explosion. And, he's a detective, and with a few other detectives, they discover some footage of what happened there. So they go back to their office to kind of piece it together to figure out what happened. And it's interesting that, they used like a normal film as the framing device, because you always wonder, these tapes get out into the world. Obviously, the authorities find these tapes, so you wonder how, you get to see the authorities actually watching these tapes for once. And I found that kind of interesting. It kind of drags a little bit, but it does have a good answer to why someone wouldn't put down a camera when they're being menaced by someone. I'm not going to spoil that because it kind of ties in with the storyline. But
is it super glued to their head?
No. They actually carry the camera, but they well, I'm not going to say anything. But
it's super glued to their hand.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly. But anyway, overall, it's just kind of a good for a one-time watch. But I will say it has one of the best twist endings I've ever seen in my life. I did not see it coming. I don't think anyone in their right mind would see this coming. I was totally shocked. I mean, I haven't had a movie do that to me, you know, just totally shock me like that in a long time. Because I'm usually fairly good at guessing the plot twists at the end of films. And this one really took me by surprise. So if nothing else, and if you don't like found footage movies, I would see that just for the twist alone because it was phenomenal.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Anything else?
Well, we watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre again because it's July and it's one of those seasonal movies. But yeah, we've already talked about that, you know, at length. So that's it.
Okay.
Well, because it's the greatest movie ever made, that's why we've talked about it so much.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it's...
I will go that far.
You see, part two is getting a deluxe three-disc special edition from Arrow in the UK, Blu-ray and a DVD of extras. And then, a Blu-ray of extras, and then they're duplicated on DVD, so it's three discs.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Excellent. I think September or October it comes out, yeah.
Okay. Should be. Thank you. Sorry. Eric.
Yeah, sorry, I was just saying it should be interesting. Sorry. Yeah. But, I might purchase it, even though I'm not a fan of the movie, but I am a fan of extras, so.
Okay. Are you not a fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
No, R1, so.
That's why I haven't picked it for the podcast, is because of Eric.
I'm not a fan of part two either. I love part one, and I like part three, and part four is kind of goofy, but part two just kind of gets on my nerves with all the screaming and running around and things of that nature.
I mean, I don't hate any of them. They don't do a lot for me.
Okay.
Yes, but part one's my favorite movie of all time, and when it gets insulted, I'm not prepared for such
onslaughts. Well, now you know how I felt when Justin came on here and slagged off Dirty Dancing.
But see, I won't slag off Dirty Dancing.
I know you won't, but Justin did, and it hurt me.
Well, I didn't slag it off, Eric. I just said it just underwhelmed me.
Yeah, well, that's slagging it off. It shouldn't underwhelm you, because it's the best film ever.
Okay, right. Well, I don't want to open up any old sores, Eric, although I did see the Toys album Anthem at the Boot Fair today for 20p, but I didn't pick it up. So, what have you been watching?
Yeah, you bought Bay City Rollers, though.
Yeah, so?
What kind of nonce are you?
How rude.
On Saturday night. Yeah. Saturday night.
They were 50p. And I bought them. I bought loads of stuff. I bought Aretha Franklin, Ella James, all sorts of different things.
But not Toya?
Not Toya, no. I passed over Toya.
You're so diverse, Justin.
I am, aren't I? I thought I'd leave it for someone else, some lucky person.
Yeah, well, okay then. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
A bit charity thing, yeah.
So, but yeah. Anyway, Eric, what have you been watching?
Okay, well, I'm a week behind you. I watched Sharknado last night, and I suppose, like as you were saying, like all sci-fi movies, you know, the title promises more than it can actually deliver. Although I did find the final 30 minutes of the film to be great fun, like the opening 5 minutes really, really reminded me of Baywatch, mainly because one of the lead actors is the Australian guy, Jason Simmons, and he used to play Logan in Baywatch. Now, I didn't know the character's name. I had to look it up on IMDb. I mean, I'm not a Baywatch aficionado by any stretch of the imagination, although I'm sure Joseph was, though.
No, I was not.
What? Pamela Anderson was in it, and you didn't watch it?
I don't like Pamela Anderson. She's too plastic.
Yeah, whatever. The major...
Bully!
Yeah, bully. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I promised I would not bully you.
I'm not bullying you. I just said I thought you might have liked the charms of Pamela Anderson. That's not
you were two steps away from me reneging on that promise, Eric.
Gosh, treading a fine line. Anyway, Ian Ziering, as it's pronounced, although it's spelled Ian Ziering, he was the main selling point for me for Sharknado because I'm a big fan of Beverly Hills 90210, in which he played Steve Sanders. And, you know, he's pretty decent in this. I like the thing I like about it is everyone plays it straight. There's no sort of nods and winks to the audience that were kind of prevalent in something like Snakes on a Plane, which again is one of those daft concept movies So, I mean, the opening half, as you were saying, Justin, is a bit ho-hum. It's very, you know, very much like typical sci-fi movie material. But I thought the second half worked really well. I thought the effects were quite well done. You know, it's obviously all sort of low-budget CGI, but for what it was, I thought it was pretty good. And it had a great ludicrous chainsaw-wielding Ian Ziering versus shark climax to the film that I particularly enjoyed. Definitely the best sci-fi film I've ever seen, although I've yet to see that Tiffany and Debbie Gibson one that you were raving about. I don't know, Mega Piranha versus Two-Headed Trouser Snake, whatever it's called.
It's amazing.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah.
And for anyone interested in not illegally downloading Sharknado, it premieres on Sci-Fi Channel UK on the 7th of August. So,
also, Regal Cinemas are doing a midnight screening at theaters. I'm not sure when or if it's already happened, but if you want to go see it at the movies, you have a chance.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because although it didn't get huge viewing figures in the States, but although it was getting great word of mouth or advanced publicity, it didn't get huge figures.
People were talking about that on, like, you know, major news broadcasts, and a lot of celebrities were, you know, talking about it on Twitter. I don't understand why it got so much publicity. I guess it was just a silly title, but
I think,
you know,
so. Yeah,
more power to them. You know.
I know people, like friends of mine, who would have no interest in sort of quote B movies are even aware of the Sharknado phenomena. So it is getting around the word. But I mean, like Snakes on a Plane, that came with a lot of advanced publicity, and it flopped, I think, didn't it, when it opened in cinemas?
It did. They expected it to be this runaway hit, and it just kind of bombed. And yeah. Sharknado's the opposite. It's just kind of one of these stupid, silly movies that got, you know, the word of mouth after the film.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's worth a watch. I mean, if you're in the UK, pencil in the 7th of August and have a look. I mean, it's pretty good fun. I mean, you know, give it time. It's a short film, but and it really is the second half that's worth watching. The first half becomes a bit... although, having said that, it does get straight into the shark action from the word go. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. It's a 6.5 out of 10, I'd say.
Fair enough.
Or is that too generous?
Probably a little bit generous.
I don't think it's too generous.
Have you seen it, Nathan?
No, but I can just, by the title alone is worth a 6.5.
Ten.
Plus, I can guarantee you guys I'm going to like it.
Well, I can think we can all guarantee that, yeah. Okay. Now, the other one I watched recently is, it came out on Blu-ray recently, Ninja 3, The Domination.
Yay!
The Sam Furstenberg movie, of course, who we all know as the wonderful director of Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I love Ninja 3. So great.
It is so brilliant. It has, not only does it have Lucinda Dickey in it, of course, who's the star of Breaking 1 and 2, but it has Lucinda Dickey with big hair. And big hair is going to be, you know, a topic of conversation in relation to Hide and Go Shriek, I can guarantee you. But
I like the fog coming out of the video game in her apartment.
I like the fact she has a video game in her apartment. They were pretty expensive, weren't they?
Yes.
To buy one of those coin-op machines would have been...
Still are. You can buy... There's a shop here in our city that sells them, but they're very expensive because they're, you know, they carry that whole, you know, nostalgia thing. I would love to own one of those.
One of the great things about the Blu-ray is there are scenes where the mystical sword... That sounds a bit rude, but the mystical sword floats around Lucinda Dickey's apartment. And you can see the strings attached to it. And it looks really, really hilariously hokey. But the film is brilliant. Of course, it's Lucinda Dickey as a telecommunications engineer during the day. And at night, she's an aerobics instructor. And then she gets possessed by a dead ninja. Again, this is the kind of film that would not get made for theatrical distribution. It's the Sharknado of its day, but it did get into the cinemas in November of 1984. The one thing about the Blu-ray that's a bit of disappointing, I mean, the image is fantastic and that, but it's just lacking in special features. It has an audio commentary, which is really good, by Sam Furstenberg and the stunt coordinator, Steve Lambert, but it would have been nice to have some featurettes or to have some Lucinda Dickey content on there.
I love Sho Kasugi's dubbing. The good ninja, the one who battles the bad ninja at the end.
Yeah.
I love the dubbing they used for him.
I wasn't really paying attention to that.
Oh, well, he's not a native English speaker. He's a Japanese, but his dubbing is just so funny. I love the golf course massacre because these cops show up. There's like 80 cops, and my cousin and I watched it one time, and we counted like the deaths. I don't remember. It's like 80 people died. These cops are shooting at this little ninja, and they just keep missing, and he kills like 80 cops in the span of like 5 minutes. It's just such a great opening scene.
And then he spins around and sort of drills himself into the earth to escape them.
Yeah, he uses one of those little smoke bombs, and then he's like whoosh right into the ground. And they're like, oh, well, he's gone. And he's just like under like half an inch of a dirt.
Yes.
God, so, yeah, what a great movie.
I highly recommend a purchase as well. Just wish that they could have gotten Lucinda Dickey to do some extra features on it.
Yeah, I wonder whatever happened to her.
She was on... No, she was a judge on one of those celebrity dancing competitions in the States in about 2008 or so.
I did not know that.
Yeah. There's clips of her on YouTube. So.
How does she look?
Great. Really great, yeah.
Excellent.
It's just a shame she cut her hair for Breaking 1 and 2, because I would have liked to have seen her with her big Ninja 3 hair in those two movies.
It probably got in the way of her breakdancing, wouldn't it, I imagine?
It could have, yeah. Mm.
So I haven't seen that. I do have the video of that, and so I have seen the film, but I haven't. It might be something I might watch tonight. Actually,
Oh God, Justin, you've got to
recommend
watch this.
It, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's going to be tonight's viewing. So
yes.
Thank you, Eric. Is there anything else?
No, I have. I've watched one other that you recommended to me, but I'll let you talk about it first.
Well, when I say recommended, it wasn't really a recommend. It was. It's a film that's just come out. Well, it came out a couple of weeks ago on DVD in the UK, and is actually out on cinema release, I think, now in the States. I think like the 25th of July. It's a terrifying ghost story called Apartment 1303. And when I said terrifying, I mean that kind of with air quotes, because it's probably one of the funniest, unintentionally funniest movies I've seen in a long, long, long time. It stars Rebecca De Mornay as a drunken ex-rock star who just spends all her day drinking lime vodka and in composing music. And she's got two adult daughters. One's Misha Barton and the other's Julianne Michelle, who I don't think I'd seen before in anything. And they're both kind of fed up of her drunken ways. So the younger daughter, Julianne Michelle, decides to move into an apartment in Detroit. And it's no spoiler, because it's a whole thing set up as a kind of ghost story. She moves into this apartment, and within five seconds, basically, it was kind of like it becomes the end of Poltergeist. It's the quickest turnaround I've ever seen. It's not like, you know, most ghost stories, they start with a door slams or there's some scratching at the door, or there's something happens, and then it kind of builds quite slowly. But with this, it doesn't. It just goes straight for the jugular in the most unsubtle way possible. I mean, she can't even open a bottle of wine because things are flying through the air. And, you know, she's got ghosts, little ghost girls head banging the window outside and all sorts of things. And it's just unintentionally funny. The whole thing is just, it's just really, really, really bad. And Misha Barton says the classic dialogue, apartments don't kill people, people kill people. And the film is so bad.
And the cop says that line twice as well. So it's said in total three times in the film.
It's like as if they thought that was a really good line. And it's so bad that the hairstylist I saw in the credits had taken an Alan Smithy credit. So, you know, wow. If you don't know, Alan Smithy is what people, usually directors, take if they want their name taken off a project, and they release it as Alan Smithy. And his name could have been Alan Smithy, but it's probably unlikely. I was watching it, because we started watching it thinking, well, let's see where this goes. And it was kind of, we've got a little annoying kind of spooky child next door and all that kind of usual kind of stuff. It's a remake of a Japanese film from 2007. But it's just so over the top, so ridiculous. Rebecca De Mornay is really fun in it, but she's quite embarrassing. I mean, she just plays a drunken lush the whole way through it. And Misha Barton looks like she's on horse tranquilizers, and she probably needed to be to get through this. But yeah, we were just kind of start watching a film and you start thinking, you know, let's see where this goes. And then you start turning to each other and start laughing, and then you just start guffawing, and then it's just, you can't take any of it seriously. So I would recommend, in a kind of ironic way, seeing this, because it is really, really bad. And the director is called Michael Taverna, And basically, I think he obviously spent most of his time in his taverna and was drunk when he directed this, because that's all I can imagine. Mm. And it's in 3D as well. So what did you think of it, Eric?
I did think it was great fun as well. Rebecca De Mornay was hilarious. She reminded me of, again, excuse me if this reference is not suitable for US audiences, but Joanna Lumley in Absolutely Fabulous. Mm. Over the top, hilarious, kind of drunk. And she, like, there's scenes in it where she's wearing a glittery headband. And there's a scene where she's singing a song called Cemetery Valentine, which sounds like something Justin might listen to. And as he says, Misha Barton, she is particularly dreadful in this. I mean, I always thought she was I don't recall her really in any other films, but I always thought she had a reputation of being a decent actress. But she's dreadful in this. She reminded me of, have you seen The Happening, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, and Mark Wahlberg's performance in that? It's itself that quality. I like the fact as well that she works as a waitress who does her job in a bomber jacket. It's not the most glamorous attire to be wearing in the workplace. And as Justin said, like when the younger daughter moves into this apartment, like not only is she spooked by ghosts on the first night, also this guy claiming himself to be the superintendent tries to force his way into her apartment, and he says, "You're a hot girl, show me your tits," which is another great line. It's fun, and it's whatever else anyone accuses it of, it's never boring. It's well worth 90 minutes of your time, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I'm putting that on the list.
I have a question. When we discussed it yesterday, unfortunately I didn't get a chance to watch it. I'm going to watch it today. You said there was a hilarious scene where, I guess it's when the girl first moves in and she first meets the little girl and she introduces herself. Like, what was that?
Yeah, she knocks on the girl's, she's looking for a corkscrew. So she knocks on the next door, apartment door, the girl answers it. And she asks the girl something like, "Oh, hi, what's your name?" And the girl goes, she says something really aggressive, like, "A girl killed herself in your apartment. She threw herself off the balcony," and she slams the door in her face. It's like, what? It's like, it's one way of getting through the plot exhibition. What's the word I'm looking for? Exposition, I suppose. But it could be handled in a more subtle fashion, surely.
Nathan, yeah. You have a copy of this?
No.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. It's on Vudu.
Okay.
But that's a tenuous recommend. If you like bad movies and unintentionally funny movies, then it's definitely worth a watch. So
I also like the line when the girl says, "Is there's someone in the closet?" And I was kind of expecting Tom Cruise to come out.
I doubt they could have afforded him, but it was something like $5 million budget, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's a remake of a Japanese movie of the same name.
Mm. I mean, the director's gone on to, he's doing another $5 million movie. He kind of reminds me of Uwe Boll, you know, kind of who gives these people the money. But obviously, the film got dumped to DVD in the UK, unsurprisingly. So I had kind of high hopes for it, and so much, I had no idea going in. I just put it on the Love Film queue, and which is like Netflix.
Had you heard anything about it in advance? No. It's not a title I'd heard of, to be honest.
No, I just thought, I was just looking, trawling through, thinking, well, I'll just bung that on. That's a new, looks okay, so blah, blah, blah. And so it just turned up. So I had no inkling it was going to be such a laugh fest. But yes. So that wasn't all. Going from the ridiculous to the even more ridiculous, perhaps. I don't think I talked about this last time, but I caught up with the Finally Saw the Collection.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the sequel to The Collector, which I just thought was, well, it was so over the top. It was kind of absolutely ridiculous. I kind of quite enjoyed it, but it was just so it just kind of, it became a kind of almost fairy tale-esque in its ridiculousness. They had like no footing in reality at all.
And it kind especially of, like, that nightclub scene at the start.
Well, yeah, it just kind of, I just thought, because what I liked about The Collector, it kind of had that kind of almost slightly gritty edge. It was still almost like a fairy tale. It had that kind of feeling to it, but this was just so over the top. It just kind of, you know, when you start watching something, it's just such an assault on your senses, and it's kind of, you're just thinking, you kind of start to can't really engage with it.
I think that's one of the reasons I liked it, because every death scene is more elaborate than the last. And I was kind of laughing at the same time as being thrilled. I really enjoyed it more than the first film, actually.
I seem to remember liking the first film more. I mean, I kind of enjoyed it. I think if I watched it again, I'd know what I was in for. But I just thought it was a kind of film that had been made by, if you've got a 13-year-old boy who decided to to a sequel to The Collector. That's the kind of film, you know, or Rob Zombie, perhaps. That's the kind of film you would get. And it's kind of on its own terms, it works. But it's just the director seems like a really nice guy. I saw some the extras, and he had them all the stuff going on in it. It was all kind of doing it to the music of Suspiria, and obviously the ending was kind of a homage to the ending of Inferno with all the fire and all that kind of stuff going on. But it just seemed to be lost to me, because there was no grounding in reality for me anyway. And I think I enjoyed it slightly more when I started thinking of it more of a kind of a fairy tale that, you know, but that was that. I know we've spoken about that to some degree, quite a lot in the past. So the other film I was going to mention was, again, it's something I watched on Love Film Instant, kind of streaming with just on a whim. They've got loads of old kind of 50s movies, horror movies and 60s, loads of William Castle stuff. But I picked The Beach Girls and the Monster, which is I hadn't heard of it before. I knew, obviously, there's all those kind of 60s beach go-go party, you know, which is basically what Psycho Beach Party kind of, you know, homages. The films like Horror of Party Beach and all those kind of films. So this is kind of one of them. But it's what struck me, actually. I mean, it's a really bad film. It's very, very funny. Was that it kind of has a kind of elements of a slasher movie, very early slasher movie. It's from 1965, because the bikini girls are being killed by this giant fish monster. Well, not even fish monster, it's basically somebody in a fish suit. But you're not sure whether or not that is actually a monster or actually somebody in a suit, but it's very Scooby-Doo-esque at the end, and they have like an aloha and a beach bongos going off everywhere, and ladies falling over with like scratches on their faces. And it has a great evil, bitchy stepmother, sexy, bitchy stepmother, played by Sue Casey. Well, that was a lot of fun. So I don't know if anyone's ever seen that or...
No, but it sounds interesting.
Mm.
I've seen it, and I remember liking it, because there was a period of time a long time ago where I was really into watching those types of films. But the main one I remember is Horror of Party Beach.
Yes, yeah.
And I love Eula Bell, you know, just saying.
Yeah. I mean, just leading on from that very quickly, another one I've just got just very quickly is, because I'm going to be putting a review up on Hysteria Lives at some point, was House of Haunted Horror, or Haunted House of Horror, sorry, which has got Frankie Avalon in it, who was in a lot of the Beach Party movies, but I don't think anyone's with monsters. But that is surprising, again, watching it again, was how much of a proto-slasher it was, because I don't really recall that many kind of teen slasher movies pre that film, actually, because they're, you know, it really sets it up with teenagers board a party, go to a haunted, supposedly haunted mansion, hunting ghosts, and get killed off by someone with a large sword. And so it has everything that the slasher movie has. And in fact, I'm pretty sure, watching again, that Tom DeSimone, whoever wrote Hell Night, kind of, you know, ripped it off. Because basically it has everything in it, like the gothic mansion, the teenager's going to spend the night there and then being killed, and also the backstory of somebody killing the whole family in the house and supposedly stalking or haunting the corridors. Is that a film any of you seen? Or
yes, I saw that a long time ago, and I don't think it left much of an impression, because I really don't remember it, but I have seen it.
Like you said, it you know, it came out long before the term slasher was even coined. So, I mean, when I saw it, I guess I was hoping for a little bit closer to slasher, like a big grand chase scene at the end, which, you know, we don't really get. I mean, there's like a tiny one, but it's not much. I mean, you know, she falls down the stairs, right? But poor Frankie Avalon. Oh, what a way to go.
I know, yes. I got in trouble for revealing that he died in the film, but it's pretty famous when I published it on Body Count Continues forums. But I think it's a pretty famous death scene, isn't it? Frankie Avalon being stabbed in the crotch with a scimitar. It's kind of it's something I actually say in my book, so it's not, you know, I'm not, you know, it's a 45-year-old film, so I'm not that worried about spoiling it. I don't give away who the killer is. But it's also the film that's famous that David Bowie was supposed to be in it.
Oh.
Which would have been even more famous if David Bowie had been in it, but apparently he was. It was a part was written for him, but he there was I think it's AIP Pictures in the States did it. It was a co-deal with Tygon in the UK, and because Frankie Avalon was in it, they didn't want to have two singers. And all I can imagine, it must have been a Frankie Avalon's his kind of he didn't want a younger singer because he was knocking 30 in it coming in. I don't know, but David Bowie was he was kicked off the project.
Well, he wasn't famous at that stage anyway. So
no,
that would have been like Scimitar to Major Crotch.
It would have been, yes. So very yes. Good. So anyway, that's all I've been watching. So good stuff. Okay.
Yes. Are we all excited about the upcoming news about Curtains coming to Blu-ray?
Yes. Oh yes. And yes. Yes.
Synapse. And Prom Night. Yeah. Is that Scream Factory you're bringing Prom Night?
No, that's Synapse as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did you see the test footage? The test. Steadicam footage from Halloween that went up on Synapse's webpage yesterday, I think it was.
No, I did see it. I didn't watch it, but I see it was posted.
Yeah, it's just shots of Dean Cundey. You don't see any of the actors in the film, but still, it's an interesting little historical artifact.
No, is this because ages and ages and ages ago, there was stuff talking about saying that there was discovered all loads of alternate takes for Halloween.
Yeah, this is what this guy said. This is an example of the quality of the takes that he has of Halloween if somebody wanted to issue them.
Because I'm sure it was Synapse or somebody said they were going to do that.
Mm.
And that was years ago. And they was almost like a completely different version of Halloween had been, as alternate takes and little changes. They could actually cut together a whole new version of it.
Yeah.
But so I'm surprised that never happened.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
But is this stuff that's going on the 35th anniversary disc?
I'm not sure what it was. I think it was just a private... Whoever owns it is kind of a private collector or a private...
Right,
owner of it, and it's just shots set around a parking lot, testing the Steadicam in the build up to production on Halloween, and then you see Dean Cundey walking around an office and going up and down the stairs testing the equipment.
Okay, because I know the 35th anniversary kind of release, which is kind of like, will I buy it yet again? I don't know, but it's going to have a Jamie Lee Curtis and John Carpenter commentary, isn't it? A new one.
And a new Jamie Lee Curtis footage of her at that convention she did earlier this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that Screen Factory putting that out, or...?
No, I can't remember who's putting that one out.
Hmm.
Maybe for the 40th anniversary edition, they'll get all three of the girls to do the commentary.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? If they're still alive.
I would buy it if they would get all three... I mean, I have Halloween. I'm not one to double dip unless it's something I really, really want in the special feature section. So if they'd get something like that, I'd do it.
Mm. Yeah,
or they could get us to do the commentary. hint.
Yes.
I'll buy it then.
We have offered our services for Curtains and Prom Night, haven't we? So
yes,
Don May, if you're listening.
Surprisingly, we didn't hear anything about that.
Not yet. Not yet, but I'm very excited about that, and I hope I know Leslie Donaldson would be up for doing extra, stuff, and her and who's the other woman who's on Facebook?
Lynn Griffin.
Yes, I think they'd be up for doing a commentary. It's just what was very, very sad was they said that up till about 5 or 6 years ago they had all the
2009,
elements.
Yeah, so 2000, four, yeah. Four, yeah.
They had all the elements for all the original stuff that was shot, and it was all thrown away, wasn't it?
Mm.
That is horrible.
Mm.
Yeah, you would think that by 2009 people would understand the sort of preservation ethos of a film.
Mm. Well,
I can understand.
They have film preservation societies, just for this fact. And the fact that this got destroyed is just so disheartening.
Mm. Like, I can imagine it being destroyed in 1984 or something, but in 2009 people should have had more sense, I would have thought.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's a real shame. I mean, it might turn up somewhere else, but I mean, the fact is that Synapse are putting out on Blu-ray and Prom Night on Blu-ray. We'll actually finally get some decent versions of those movies because
John Vernon in HD, yay!
Yeah,
the images they posted on their Facebook account look incredible.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and they put up a minute long section as well from actually towards the end of Curtains.
Oh, I did not see that.
I didn't see that.
Did you not? Yeah, they put up a minute of it. They said, like, there's still some processing work to be done in it, but it looked amazing, yeah.
Mm. Okay, all right. Well, we'll bring you more news about that when we get it, and obviously when we get our deal, multi-million pound deal for commentaries.
Yeah.
And Synapse flies us out to Las Vegas for a weekend. Hint, hint. But in other words, we'll do it for free, like this. But so, anyway, I think it's probably time to get our quiz hats on. So, Joseph.
Yay! I'm still going to win.
Yeah. So, I may or may not, if I remember, lay some kind of quiz-type music underneath this with the magic of internet radio. So,
Yay!
So, Joseph, do you want to take it away? How are you going to do it?
Well, this is just a kind of a random slasher movie quiz. The first part is quotes. And we are going alphabetically, so Eric, door number one, door number two, or door number three, and these are quotes.
Well, number two, obviously.
Okay. In what movie does this quote belong? That cocaine made me really horny.
Well, I have no idea. I imagine it's really late 80s when the coke phase was really in swing, so I will say something like, Evil Laugh?
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to pass this on to Justin.
Is it Friday the 13th, part 5?
No, nope. I am sorry. I'm going to pass it on to Nathan now.
I'll say Strip Nude for Your Killer.
No, I'm sorry. The answer was Terror on Tour.
I've never seen Terror on Tour. Give me a question about a film I've seen.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. I don't remember it.
And it begins.
And it begins, yeah. Yes.
All right. Justin, door number one or door number three?
Door number one, please.
Okay. In what movie does this quote belong? The world is just not the same. Today, the heroine has to save herself.
Hmm. That does ring a bell. But it's going to be, I guess, I would say, Nightmare on Elm Street?
No, I'm sorry. Nathan.
Oh, God, I have no idea. The heroine has to save herself. Scream 2.
No, I'm sorry. Eric.
Scream 1.
No, actually, the answer is Deadly Games.
I haven't seen Deadly Games. So there.
Oh, I'm thinking of Fatal Games. Yeah, I haven't seen it either. Ask me a question about a film I've seen.
I have seen it, but not for about 15 years. We forgot, didn't we? It's always the way. Joseph always makes it hard.
Yeah, he does.
Can we get a matron there, please?
Matron.
Matron, no, please. Oh, your hand.
Okay.
Arigato. All right, Nathan.
Yeah.
In what movie does this quote belong? This place is beautiful and all that, but it's still spooky.
Terror at Ten Killer.
No, I am sorry. Eric.
Hell Night?
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
This place is beautiful and all that, but it's spooky.
It's still spooky.
Humongous?
No, I'm sorry. The answer is Honeymoon Horror.
I bet Eric hasn't seen that one either.
I have seen Honeymoon Horror.
Wow, you're all tied with zero.
Hooray!
Yay, I'm winning.
You're not.
jointly, but I'm still winning.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is just general questions. And we're going to start with Justin. Door one, two, or three?
Door number two, please.
Okay, and you should probably get this one. In Alone in the Dark, what is the name of the song played by the Sick Fucks?
Chop Up Your Mother?
That is correct.
Yay!
All right. Nathan, door number one or door number three?
Three.
Okay. What is the name of the serum that gives John Kirby his super strength and regeneration abilities in Silent Rage?
What? You know I hate Silent Rage. So
well, you
I
picked
wiped
door number
that
three.
Movie from my memory. You is shit serum. That's what it is.
Ooh. Oh, you picked door number three.
I've never heard him say a dirty word.
I think Nathan deserves a bit of...
One great Latin lover thinks he can just sit there looking like God's gift to women, you lousy fraud.
So that's for Nathan.
It's mainly because I got a question about a movie I don't like.
One of you should have picked door number one then.
Yeah.
I hate door number three.
All right. Eric, do you know?
I don't think I've ever seen Silent Rage in full, so I'm just going to guess. Is the serum called Susan?
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
I don't know. I'm going to take a stab. TC1?
No, it is the Mojon 35. And you actually mention it in your review, Justin.
But I wrote that years ago.
Yeah, well,
stupid name for serum, by the way.
Yeah, stupid. It's a stupid question from a stupid person.
You guys should bone up on your slasher movie knowledge.
Well, maybe you should pick some slasher movies that are relevant.
All right, yeah. Eric.
Yeah.
In Are You in the House Alone? How many people die?
Never even heard of the film. So I'm going to say 8.
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
0.
That is correct. So we are with Justin at 2, and Nathan and Eric are tied with 0.
Bravo. Practice makes perfect, and Justin
One
is always so perfect.
Lover thinks he can just sit there looking like God's gift to women, you lousy fraud.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now this round...
It's not who wins the quiz. It's who's got the nicest bum.
Oh, Eric, will you ever win?
Eric, what you need to do, I mean, you've got charm, you've got uniqueness, you've got nerve, and you've got talent, as RuPaul would say. So you should just go with it, shouldn't you?
Yeah.
Did you know, Nathan, just an aside, you've heard that term before, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know what it actually stands for? Because I didn't twig it.
No, actually, I don't.
It's charm... uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
Oh.
See you next Tuesday.
Yeah. See you next Tuesday, yeah. So it's a good way of insulting people like I just did to Eric and he didn't realise. So,
you
anyway.
Just called me the C word. That's the rudest word of all.
Yeah, and I think you deserved it.
I did not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, Joseph, you carry on now. Well, carry on towards my victory.
Ha, 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 ha. Round three now. You're going to need your pen and paper for this round. This is the anagram round.
Okay.
And who did we start with last time? Was it Justin?
Justin,
so Nathan. What I'm going to do is give you the letters. You're going to write them down, and I'm going to say go. And when I say go, you're going to have 30 seconds to guess to figure out which title this is. And if you don't guess, no one else can steal the points.
So there's no point the rest of us writing it down?
No.
No, okay.
Okay, so door number one, door number two, or door number three, Nathan?
One.
Okay, ready?
Sure.
E-S-T-N-A-L-D, 3 A's and a B. And you have 30 seconds on go.
So what are you having for dinner tonight, Eric?
Crisps, I think.
Okay.
What are you having?
Thai green curry, I think.
10 seconds.
It's stagnant.
No, I am sorry. 3 seconds.
Standalone.
Time up. Sorry.
Alabama.
I did not get it. It is Satan's Blade.
Ah. I thought it was
that's
a
not fair.
If I thought it was a bald nest.
If you were going to do a real anagram, you should do it word for word.
I did.
You didn't tell me, like, this is one word and then this is the second word.
No, you have to take all the letters and put them together. That's what an anagram
that's
is.
That's difficult. I hate anagrams. F you,
all right.
Anagrams.
All right, Eric. Yeah. Door number two or door number three?
I'll go for our number two again, please.
All right, are you ready?
Yes.
EGCHNOASDT. And you have 30 seconds on go.
So what are you having for tea tonight, Nathan?
You know, the tea that we have over here is iced sweet tea.
Oh, okay. So we call tea, sometimes it's our dinner or supper.
Oh, is it all tea, no shade?
Well, it's kind of like that, but it's actually when we say tea, we actually mean to eat rather than drink.
Oh, interesting. Not eating
8 tea. Seconds. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time up. Sorry.
Is it stage chant?
No.
Chan. It's the something, isn't it?
It is ghost dance.
Ah, oh, fuck.
All right, Justin.
Okay, all right.
Are you ready?
I've got my pen.
T-T-S-H-E-E-R-F-O. And 30 seconds on, go.
Okay.
La, 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 la. Oh, that's so easy, that one.
I'm rubbish at these.
I would have got that one. And I mean it this time.
I would not have gotten any of these.
Well, the first one I thought was a bald nest, ah. The second one,
bald
I'm sure.
Bald nest, ah.
Yeah, 10 seconds.
You know that famous slasher movie, A Bald Nest, ah. And then I thought the second one was definitely Stage Chong.
5, 4,
Stage
Chong
is one of my favorites.
2, 1, time up, sorry.
Is it Tshrefo?
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's the forest.
Yeah,
I'm rubbish at anagrams.
Oh, I thought it was Thor Fruster.
That sounds
phony, like an anagram.
Well, you have to admit that was kind of fun.
Well, I'm going to make a film called Stage Chan and then come back to this episode and sue you because I was correct.
It wouldn't be like you, Eric, to pretend to start making trouble, would it?
No.
So, Joseph, have we got another round, or have I won?
Yes, we have two more rounds. Ooh. And this is the higher body count round. You have to guess between three films which has the higher body count.
Okay.
And Eric, door number one, door number two, or door number three?
I'll go door number one this time.
Okay. Which has the higher body count? Blood Frenzy, Cheerleader Camp, or Horror House on Highway 5?
Well, I haven't seen Horror House on Highway 5, so I'm going to go for that. Horror House on Highway 5.
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect.
No, I meant Blood Frenzy.
Actually, the answer is...
No, I meant Cheerleader Camp.
Cheerleader Camp with 10, Blood Frenzy with 7, and Horror House on Highway 5 with 8.
Yeah, well, we pronounce Cheerleader over here in Ireland as Horror House.
Sure we do. Justin.
Yes, okay.
Door number 2 or door number 3?
Door number 2, please.
Which has the higher body count? Chopping Mall, Stage Fright, or You Will Die at Midnight?
Well, I would say Stage Fright.
That is correct.
That was so easy. Stage Fright has a huge body count, so obviously, regardless of what
Stage
was
Fright, Stage Fright has... Okay.
That was an easy one.
That
just
was
saying.
An easy one.
Yeah, but as Joseph would back up, any one of us could have picked that number, couldn't we?
No, but how do we know Joseph is picking them at random? Joseph's not picking them at random.
Yeah, I think that he's saying we're picking these doors, but he's given specific questions to specific.
Yes, so do I.
Justin, you are being very gentlemanly on this quiz.
Well, he's winning. Of course he is.
You're giving the easy questions. Of course he'll be gentleman.
I know that, I think Joseph's got complete integrity, and I know he's got charm, uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
Yeah,
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Thank you. The actual answer was Stage Fright with 10. Chopping Mall with 9, and You Will Die at Midnight has 7.
Well, thank you anyway for your graciously losing Eric and Nathan. So,
you're welcome.
All right, Nathan. Which has the higher body count? Anguish, Friday the 13th Part 5, or Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, or Killer Workout?
Killer Workout.
Actually, I'm sorry, the answer is Anguish.
You are actually wrong.
No. Anguish with 18. Friday the 13th Part 6 with 17. And Killer Workout with 11.
You have not seen the unrated version of Killer Workout, which features an additional 15 deaths.
Yes.
So,
are,
you are not picking the right one.
And there's an unrated version of Horror House on Highway 5 as well.
That you have not seen.
That you? Oh, I have, and I just
remember. No, you haven't.
I have it on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got 29,000 deaths in it.
Thank you.
Are they
Thank
all on screen?
Era. Yeah.
Wow.
Goes on for quite a while.
Yes.
Okay, final round, and this is a podcast-centered round, our podcast. So, Justin.
Yes.
Door number 1, 2, or 3.
I shall go for number 2.
Okay. What was the 23rd episode of The Hysteria Continues?
I have no idea, and I'm not going to look it up.
I'm going to take a guess.
Superstition?
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Nathan?
Criminally Insane and Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. Eric?
Body Count?
No, I'm sorry. The answer is The Last Slumber Party.
It was one of my picks. I just picked the wrong one.
All right. Nathan, door number 1 or door number 3?
Does it really matter at this point? 1.
What was the 9th episode of The Hysteria Continues?
I'm going to say Killer Party.
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Eric?
Okay, an early one, My Bloody Valentine?
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
I don't know. A Superstition?
That is correct.
He's looking it up.
I'm not looking it up.
He's got iTunes open.
I am not looking it up. I honestly did not. I only chose that because I said it last time. So, but Eric, anyway, does it really matter at this point?
It really doesn't. It
does to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric, last question. What was the 43rd episode of The Hysteria Continues?
43rd, so if we do that's about 2 years in. I'm going to guess. Sorry, The Grudge. Yeah, so I was going for that. I can't even think of anything we've covered. Dressed to Kill.
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
43rd. I'm trying to think what we've covered relatively recently. Where are we up to now? We're 63, aren't we? So it's 20 episodes ago.
About 40 weeks, so it would be probably the late last year.
Friday the 13th, part 2?
No, I'm sorry. Nathan?
I'm going to say... Criminally Insane and Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
No, actually, the answer was Cutting Class.
No.
I should have known it had been one of your picks.
So, Justin is in. Justin wins the quiz with 4, and Eric and Nathan lose terribly with 0.
Oh.
Well, that's what happens when you give sucky...
Blah, 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 blah.
Just saying, the quizzes that I throw, everybody gets points.
Yeah. Cheater, cheater, tofu eater.
One step away, Eric. One step.
Yeah, come on. You need to...
That was a Justin, not at you.
Yeah, what? Because I won. So yeah. I won the quiz with my charm, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, and you didn't. I mean, suck it up.
Ooh.
No.
One great Latin lover thinks he can just sit there looking like God's gift to women, you lousy fraud.
Yeah.
Yes. So
congratulations, Justin.
Thank you.
You win an all-expense-paid trip to Cancun.
Thank you. Is that
with Nathan and Eric? Into that bargain.
Nathan and Eric, we have some nice parting gifts for you. Here's a coupon to the Sizzler.
There's not a Sizzler around here. See, you screw us over even in that.
Is it like a Still Know We Did Last Summer deal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to be sent off to be murdered anyway.
Yes.
Yay.
Nathan. I'll take you all with me. So, how would we die if we were going to be bumped off? I can imagine Eric being killed in the hot tub.
You have such disdain for Eric. You won't even take him with you to die.
No, I said I would.
Yeah, he said he'd take us.
Yeah, I said I'd take all of us.
I thought you just said Nathan.
No, no, all three, all four of us, I would take us.
Hey, I'm the quiz guy. I'm not going.
Yes, you are. And you're going to be the first to die.
I'll be the killer.
And how would you kill us? I can see.
I'm Hanson. Hanson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, my goodness, yes.
Well, mine works even better. I'm John's son.
See? That doesn't make any sense.
Eric's Threl.
Because people are named Hen.
Yeah.
Yes. Have you ever heard of Betty Hen or James Hen?
No. Or I've heard of Betty White.
Well, I've never heard of them either. I'm just trying to, I don't know.
I think that Eric would be fed a poisoned Kit Kat, maybe? Mm. Or is that not slasher-esque enough? His stomach would explode from it.
Well, we know
Slaughter High.
We know Justin wouldn't die in the tanning bed because he's a goth and he likes
That's
to be
true. Pale.
Mm.
So Justin would probably die indoors.
Well, Justin, you were about to say how I would die. I'm intrigued to know what was about to come out of your mouth.
No, I just got these visions of you in a hot tub.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Oh,
but
yeah. I like being in a hot tub.
Yeah, no, but I was trying to think it might be a little bit like the killing in Valentine of what's her name?
Oh yeah.
You know, this could be an interesting top three. Your top three ways to die in a slasher film.
Yes, I think. Well, we'll make a note of that. So that would be good. And also, someone was talking on the forums about top three ditzes. So we might be doing that
so
at some point.
On
the podcast, Justin would be my number one.
What ditzes?
Yeah, it's the top three ditzes in the podcast.
Who won that quiz? Eric, remind me.
He sounded like Stewie. He sounded like Stewie there for a second there.
Who, Justin?
Yes, he's like, remind me, Eric, please.
Eric has won a quiz before, though.
I have won a quiz before, so there.
Yeah, it doesn't really count if it was that long ago, does it?
La 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 la.
Yes. So, anyway.
I think Nathan has won more than anyone, though.
Yeah, so why are you bitching, Nathan?
Well, I bitch because it's fun, and you should know that. You watch RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, that is true.
Since when is bitching not fun?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for your charm, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, and we will now move on, I think.
Wait a minute. You're calling me a cunt.
Yeah, you are. He is.
This whole time, he wins the quiz, and he's calling me a cunt. How
I know.
I was calling Nathan a cunt.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, Justin, while you untuck in the Interior Illusions Lounge,
yes,
we will move on to the main feature.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. So we are going to go on to the main feature. And Eric, you're going to come in, aren't you? If you can put yourself together after that crushing defeat. So
I care about losing some stupid quiz.
How could you sit there and laugh at me?
So here's the trailer for Hide and Go Shriek.
It was their graduation party. A night for friends.
Well, here's to eight fabulous friends who got through high school and are gonna do great things!
You are gonna love making love. You'll never wanna stop.
A night for love. A night for games.
Let's play hide and go seek.
But someone else is playing a game with their lives. Soon.
this shocking thriller captures the horror eight teenagers face when they sneak into a furniture store for an all-night party. A game of hide-and-seek turns into a grisly nightmare as the members of the group are murdered one by one, leaving the others to the chilling realization that they could be next. Close your eyes, count to 10, and run for your life. Hide and Go Shriek is one game you'll be dying to finish. And that is the blurb for Hide and Go Shriek, taken from the back of the VHS. The film starts, actually, with a man applying lipstick and mascara on himself. And I was thinking, how did one of Justin's home videos get into my Blu-ray player? But then slowly as it unfolds more, I said, oh, this is Hide and Go Shriek, thankfully. Because if there's one thing I don't want to see, it's one of Justin's home movies. Who knows where they could go? This is a semi-subversive twist.
Bitter much.
Hey, Justin, congratulations on winning that quiz, by the way, Justin.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you to Joseph for feeding me the questions.
Yeah.
For believing in me.
I just did a curtsy, by the way.
Thank you.
Well,
congratulations.
In the words of Wendy from Prom Night, it's not who wins the quiz, it's who has the nicest beard.
What, downstairs?
Eric wears a merkin.
Come on, back on bullying.
This is like, I feel like I'm in Blade in the Dark.
Oh god,
I told you one step and that step is gone.
Can I get back to a Hide and Go Shriek,
please?
Yes.
Okay,
please.
It's a semi-subversive twist on the slasher genre. It borrows its setting from 1984's The Initiation and 1986's Chopping Mall, which we've both covered previously on The Hysteria Continues, in that the film is set almost entirely in a very large furniture store where eight high school graduates have decided to have a party. They play hide and go seek simply for the reason, you know, just to justify the film's title. Instead of playing hide and seek, they just all pair off and have sex in sort of the beds in this furniture shop. What distinguishes Hide and Go Shriek from other slashers of the late 80s is the reveal of the killer. And we'll probably get to that later. But apart from that, it's very much a by-the-numbers entry. It's got the big hair, the gaudy clothes, and the other paraphernalia that made the 80s such a wonderful decade. For me, anyway, I know that, you know, Justin doesn't look back with great fondness on the fashions. What is wonderful about this film is it's completely unpretentious. Like most 80s slashers, it's not aware yet of the conventions, and so it's happy to wallow in the cliches. So you get, you know, characters like the mysterious ex-con Red Herring, who's living in the basement of the furniture shop, the stereotypical jocks and the shy girl, the tart, the chubby nerd, lots of false scares involving the kids trying to scare each other, plenty of "hey, who's there" moments, and Kim, who is probably my favorite character in the film. Speaking of ditzes, which we may be doing as a top three in the future, she would probably be a candidate, mainly because, for starters, she looks like she's about 57 and she's playing an 18-year-old. But she's showing her friends this sexy negligee that she has purchased recently, and she utters the 80s-tastic, you know, airhead line, "This will, like, totally turn him on," which I love. The late 80s weren't chock-a-block with really good slashers, and I couldn't rate this as a top-tier entry, but I do think it's worth a look. You know, a younger audience might find it a bit slow, but for me, much of its joy is wallowing in the fact that it looks so dated and it's so of its time, you know, in terms of its look and its script, because it offers no surprises, you know, except, as I said, for the reveal of who the killer's identity is, which comes completely out of left field. And according to Justin's review on Hysteria Lives, he may have a slight issue with the sort of morality of it. But I'll talk to you about that in a minute, Justin. I didn't read anything terribly offensive into the film, I have to say. The heavy 80s look is what buoys it along during its you know, slump, maybe in the middle where there's no slasher action happening, because it does lack a certain zip, certainly in its opening half. But there's great scenes in amongst all the just of them wandering around and having sex. There's one scene where Bonnie, who has the biggest hair possibly of any slasher girl ever, she's trying to take off her top in a very slow and seductive way, but it sort of kind of gets caught in her huge hair. So it's kind of an awkward motion that she removes her top in, and it's quite unsexy, which I thought was particularly funny. What was I going to say? Sorry, the killer. You know, we don't see who it is throughout the film. What we see is kind of the person in shadows. But what we do get is we see that the killer in a riff from Terror Train is dressing up in the victim's clothes as he knocks them off, including at one stage getting into that negligee that Kim had bought for her boyfriend. So, I mean, if nothing else, this has to be possibly one of the only slasher movies to have a big buff male killer in a sexy, you know, Ann Summers negligee. And that has to be, you know, worth the admission price. Also worth the admission price is one particularly gory highlight, which I'm sure must have been cut from the UK release of the film. It's a decapitation by elevator. That's actually really, really convincing. And the special effects were actually done by Screaming Mad George, which I didn't realise until I went back to the film this week. And that scene is really, really effective and quite shocking and very, very bloody, considering the rest of the film isn't as graphic. I think the furniture store is a great location for the film. I don't think it's exploited to its fullest in the film. I mean, the characters keep going on about how many floors there is and how huge the store is, but you never get a sense of that, I don't think, in the film. You know, I think something like The Initiation or Chopping Mall or indeed Intruder captures that feeling of a large space much better. Possibly this might be to do with the print I was watching, which I was watching a VHS copy, and the print is really, really dark. It suffers from the same pitfalls as Humongous did, you know, prior to its DVD reissue a few years back. So, I'd love to see what somebody, as we were saying, Synapse or Scream Factory could do with Hide and Go Shriek. I don't think it would be a big seller for them, but I would like to see a cleaned up copy, because there are scenes where it's just a bit too dark. It probably would be a better film if you could actually see in some certain scenes what's going on. But I think I give it a thumbs up. Again, not an essential viewing, but a fun movie. And if you like big hair and silly bimbo late 80s talk, then this is the film for you. So, Justin, you mentioned in the review on Hysteria Lives that you did, you know, possibly 10 years ago, that there was a possible offensive element to the reveal of the killer. Do you still stand by that, or...?
Well, yes and no, really, because I think it's whether or not. I mean, if we're going to spoil,
We might as well spoil it. It's Fred, who is living in the basement, is set up as the red herring, and the killer turns out to be his gay lover, ex-gay lover, who he met in prison, but once they broke up, the ex-partner has gone a bit mad. So
a bit mad.
A bit mad. And he looks kind of like, I was saying this to you on Facebook, he looks kind of like the UK comic Julian Clary, which diminishes his threat quite considerably for me.
Well, I think it's kind of, there's always going to be an element of, you know, the fact is that if you take a lot of slasher movies at face value, I mean, they trivialise mental illness, don't they? I mean, I'm not trying to moralise about it because... You know, this is a slasher movie show. But if you look at it from, you know, kind of not an academic, but like from a removed standpoint and looking at something like that, but you could find this offensive in so much it's got a gay killer, stereotypically, although he's quite a hulking kind of, you know.
Yeah, but then his makeup is kind of very, as you say, stereotypical.
Mm. And so it's kind of plays on that whole kind of fear of the other. Certainly at the end when it has probably my favourite bit in the whole movie has to be when the killer slips on the severed head and falls down the lift shaft. That's a moment of pure genius. But the surviving teens, when the killer's there and the makeup and everything and he's arguing with his ex-lover, you know, they just kind of look of disgust on their face, which is understandable. Obviously, he just killed all their friends, but... it depends. I mean, to be honest, it's too silly, really, to be offensive. And I could see, you know, it probably would be offensive to a lot of people, I would have thought. I mean, I didn't really find it too offensive. I mean, this time when I watched it, I mean, I enjoyed it for a lot of it. I think The middle section is what kills it, if anything does, is just that it's an awful lot of splitting up and people having sex or not having sex and then going, gee, this store's really massive. And it just goes on forever, doesn't it? It could have really done with a slightly better pacing, I think, throughout. I mean, the early stuff, I mean, I'm sure... Eric and probably Nathan would have been in sort of heaven with the 80s kind of fashion and the whole kind of the girls and the boys all getting together and the dinosaur earrings and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of, it was, you know, it was fun. And I kind of, none of the characters particularly well drawn or particularly, well, they're believable in what they are. I did like, probably my favourite character is what you were talking about, Bonnie with her big hair. Because by the end of the movie, all she's doing, she's kind of, you know, Beaker in The Muppets.
Yes.
She's like that, isn't she? Just but with bigger hair. So like, yeah. Like that. She's running around. Everyone else is going, let's do this. And she's just kind of like really freaked out. And it's just her hair is acting. And the rest of her face is just this kind of like Beaker from The Muppet, of mouth opening and shutting and nothing coming out.
She reminded me kind of a less shrill, I think it's Donna Wilkes in Jaws 2, who goes insane kind of for the second half of the movie.
She does have that great little bit of dialogue, you know, I don't understand.
Well, I think that's a cue, because we may have that clip available.
Oh.
Yes. Here we go.
I don't understand.
Oh, yes. So anyway, that's, I've got more to say, but I'll kind of pass it back.
Okay. Nathan, do you understand?
I do understand. And, I think that this movie is amazing. It's amazingly incredible. I love it.
Did we ever doubt you think that?
I can't even tell you how many times I've seen this movie. I probably didn't even have to rewatch it for the podcast, but you know, I have to do it when we do new episodes, but no, I love all the characters, and I think it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned the ending, you know, could be offensive, because this is one of those movies that shows like a lot of like male flesh, has a lot of male flesh on display. It seems like all the guys, you see them like in their underwear, and one guy I think you see his ass in one scene. I mean, they show a pretty good bit of guys, you know, in various states of undress, you know. And I think one thing I like about Hide and Go Shriek that I used to not care as much for is the fact that more people survive than you would expect. You know, I mean, you have 8 teenagers in a secluded location. I mean, you don't expect as many to survive that do in this film. I think, what is it, like 4 survive?
Yeah, I think 4 survive, yeah.
So he only gets half of them. So he was a little bit inept in that way as a killer. You know, he didn't really keep up with the other slashers from that era.
Why was he killing people?
He wanted to make the perfect home, I think, or something. Doesn't he say that with Fred? And so I suppose these interlopers were disrupting that perfect home ideal in his head. So
I would have been like, "Hey, you can go. Hey, we'll let you have the place."
Yeah,
I mean, that's all. All you do is ask. You'd have to kill us. But I love the death scene where I can't remember the character's name, but he picks him up and like it's, you know, they're like the spikes.
Oh, Sean is the character.
He just kind of throws him onto the spikes. I like that death scene a lot. And like you said, the elevator death scene is a huge standout. And I've always loved the scene where they're trying to find weapons and, you know, the hysterical girl, Bonnie's grabbing the mannequin arm. And she like rips it out and it's like covered in blood because her boyfriend's been stabbed with it. Like they really use the mannequins in this film to full effect, because they're like getting killed with mannequin limbs. They're using them as weapons. It's very interesting.
Did you wonder why a furniture store has so many mannequins?
Yeah, well, he says it's the owner wants to create kind of a lived-in look. But I've never seen a furniture store with mannequins in it, I have to say.
But mannequins, not just a few, it's mannequins, the killer puts up and down stairs, or there's just like, it was like a Mario Bava movie.
I was about to say, it's like a Jell-O with so many bloody mannequins everywhere. Or it's like Mannequin.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love Mannequin. But no, I mean, I think it's It's a great movie, and you played a sound clip at the beginning of the show where I always felt bad for the one guy, you know, when his girlfriend's sitting there just making fun of him because he only lasted 10 seconds. It's like, poor guy. And then all his friends hear it. That makes it even worse.
I thought you were going to pick out the clip where he goes, "Who stole my clothes?"
That's a good one, too. Yeah. He kind of has that whiny voice, which that actor went on to play the killer in Slumber Party Massacre Part 3.
Yes.
Ah, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, it's interesting.
But anyway, that's my tuppence.
A big thumbs up there. Joseph, are you as enthusiastic? Or is this another one where it's us against you?
No, I would probably agree with Nathan. I really do like this film. The whole revealing the killer to be gay, this kind of gay stereotype, first off, I actually like the direction in this film. It's directed by, I want to say, I could be wrong, is it Skip Skulnick?
I'd say that.
Yeah, I really like his direction, but I kind of have a feeling that either him or the writer were maybe struggling with their sexuality because, as Nathan said, there's a lot of, you know, male flesh, and then at the end, they reveal this killer to be this kind of stereotypical kind of homosexual, and I kind of wonder if someone on the set was kind of wrestling with their, you know, their sexuality, and I felt that, you know, as a left-field kind of revelation, it was kind of, you know, suitably bonkers, but I thought maybe the movie would have had a better message or maybe would have fit that. Maybe that revelation would have fit better if these characters were kind of, unlikable homophobes, but you know, through the whole film, these characters are actually kind of likable, and I could be wrong. I don't really remember anyone making any kind of gay slurs or anything of that nature. So they really don't deserve it. And it kind of shines a, you know, kind of a horrible light on that whole, you know, morality thing that, you know, Justin was talking about. I thought maybe if the characters were kind of, you know, mean toward the, you know, the gay persuasion, maybe they deserved it and the killer's revelation would have made a little more sense than, I want to make a happy home. So overall, I think, you know, it works in kind of a bonkers way, but I don't know. It could have used a little more subtext maybe, if that makes any sense.
Well, one review I read pointed out that there's kind of a Freddy's Revenge moment at the very start with the two guys lifting weights. And yeah, one of the guys says, "Come on, let's go take a shower." And then he suggestively bites into his banana.
Yeah, one of those guys is played by Sean Kanan. And he's actually very likable in this film. It's kind of weird because he went on to be in Karate Kid 3 and he was such an asshole in that film. Mm. So I thought he did a really good job here. I actually thought most everyone did a really good job. I actually liked the characters. I didn't find any of them unlikable. You know, some of them were a little whiny, but, you know, they were people you'd be kind and cordial to if you hung out with them for a couple of hours. You know, like I said, the direction's really good. I think, you know, like you said, Eric, they don't really utilize the store to its full potential, but I think what they do is a lot of great camera angles of, you know, faraway shots. And that scene where they kind of use the mannequins as a kind of to heighten the tension. You remember which scene I'm talking about?
Well, there's a lot of mannequin action in the movie.
Well, there's one scene in particular where they kind of focus a lot on the mannequins during, I guess it's kind of a stalking sequence or something. But I thought, you know, using the mannequins in the store was, you know, really well done. And the faraway shots of the killer, you know, in the clothing. I thought a lot of the composition on those scenes were really well done. The death scenes are pretty good. Could have used a higher body count. You know, like you've said, the ending is, you know, suitably left field. And I wouldn't say I'd like it as much as Nathan, but it's probably close enough. So a thumbs up from me. I liked it.
Mm. Yeah, one of the strong scenes I thought in the film was where I think it's Kim pops out for a wee. And when she comes back, she thinks she sees Randy there because the killer's dressed in Randy's clothes, which is the distinctive shades and braces. And she realizes it's not him and starts screaming and runs off. And then he follows her into the elevator. I thought that was quite a suspenseful.
Now Randy's scene. Randy's the one who went on to be in Slumber Party Massacre 3, right?
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like snow or vanilla ice. That flat top haircut. I kept expecting Informer or something like that. He just had a very bad hairstyle and a very bad fashion sense. He had the kind of neon parachute pants and those glasses. It was just very distracting.
Oh, the joys of the 80s.
I think you're right, though, Eric. I think that scene is actually really well done, you know, for such a cheesy movie.
It's very creepy.
And the fact that, you know, the elevator's, you know, she's on the elevator and it's starting to move and he actually is able to, like, just jump on it, like, right before it gets out of his reach. Like, that was really good, too.
I like that
one,
too.
One thing I forgot is I said I'd give it a thumbs up, but I think it'd be more appropriate if I gave it a, oh, yeah.
I thought that was never coming back again.
I lied.
Did anyone notice how loud the kissing was in this film?
Dial it down a little bit. We were talking about directors kind of last night when we were watching that Under the Bed and the father being an overactor. We were talking about people reeling in their actors. I think someone should have been on set to kind of reel in the kissing sounds. Tone it down a little bit. It's a little mwah, mwah, mwah.
Yeah, I know. Moist and sloppy. Ugh.
It was also all that kind of...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it was just the talking of overacting. It was kind of like the kind of this almost Scooby-Doo-esque kind of nature of the of Fred, who was the who's a character that you obviously meant to think was a kiddler, at least for the first half an hour, because he's the new kind of handyman or whatever who's allowed to sleep in the department, isn't he? Because he's broken up with his girlfriend, and so. But every other character looks at him, and goes, "Oh my god, he's so creepy." It's kind of
Justin, in your review of Hide and Go Shriek, you'd made a mention of a walk as possibly being a clue to the identity of the killer. Now, what did you mean by that?
I've questioned him about this already. Yes,
the walk. Reveal. Well, I just thought the whole it was kind of like a really cack-handed thing to say that he was gay because at the beginning of the film it says that he split up with his girlfriend. And so he's come to live in the store. But then I was saying to Eric, how many slasher movie villain or slasher movie people in slasher movies cook with a wok, and not only with a wok, with spring onions? Basically, it was saying that he's like this vegetarian homo, I think.
Justin's the killer.
You really dig deep there.
Yeah. But it also adds extra potency then to the line at the end where he's on the gurney being taken to the ambulance and he says something like, "I just wanted to go straight." Fred is an ex-con who was in prison.
Yeah.
So you could take that either way, and then if it is, you know, to be taken either way, then that possibly is offensive. But
and Nathan had mentioned this already, but it does have that immortal line, "I tell you it's over and now you kill people."
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines is, "You're going to love making love. You'll never want to stop. And this is the best place to do it." What, like in a furniture shop in front of all your friends?
Well, that was kind of... I thought it was kind of interesting. The very first character that got killed off was kind of the goody girl, you know, like the one that maybe would normally be set up to be the final girl.
Well, she was about to be a baddie girl with Sean.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of people, some of the reviews I've read for Hide and Go Shriek, they question why these teens would want to party in a furniture store. And Nathan and I have talked about this. Who cares? It's a place. It's a setting. Who cares why they're there? They just want a party. They want a private place to party. Why do you have to nitpick something like that?
Mm. There's lots of beds there as well for...
Yeah, exactly. For
what they have planned. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This just the finale to this movie. I've never seen anything quite like it, you know, with a killer facing so many characters at once and his insane ramblings. And I love his non-reaction to being hit in the face. Like, you know, his ex-boyfriend like hits him in the face really hard. And then he just gets back up and is like, "Okay, now let's take care of him."
And then he's like, "Why don't you love me anymore, Zach?" No, he's Zach. I'm sorry.
He's Zach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach and Fred.
Yeah. Fred. Sorry.
It's just like,
no, his name is Zach, so yeah, obviously he would be gay.
I've never seen anybody have such a reaction to being hit in the face.
Yeah, it's just
like he didn't even get hit. Yeah, it was nothing.
And that sound effect is a whack. So it's like very hard, very hard hit, and he just kind of shrugs it off. And I guess prison, you know, hardened him up a little bit.
It's funny because, well, I mean, as we know, he didn't really get killed because he's, you know, at the end of the movie, that final shot, but... He's, you know, I guess, quote-unquote demise, you know, is just brought about by his own clumsiness. It's not like anything the characters did. It just falls.
Absolutely, it's my favorite.
Yeah, it's kind of like that movie that you showed me. What was it, Nathan? Where he spins around out the killer spins around out the window.
Oh, it's Straight Jacket.
Yeah.
It sounds like Sanity. Wonder Woman.
Yeah, you're not going to get my Lucy Duncan, or you're not going to get my Henry, not Lucy Duncan, and you, and then it just spin fall out the window.
But it must be the only film because he kind of it's a bit like actually, funny enough, in The Collector, because a similar thing happens as somebody falling down a lift shaft and surviving. But he must be the only character. In, you know, apart from that, in slash movie history, he's managed to fall down a lift shaft and walk away. It must be in the because his pan stick makeup was so thick that it protected
Eric
him.
And Eric and Justin, have you ever fallen down on a shaft?
I haven't, no, but I think Justin has.
Excellent, well done, Nathan.
Well, it seems a little bit rickety, Doctor.
Is it? Yes, but of course it's fairly easy to get it up. It's getting it to stay up. That's what counts.
Mm. Yay!
Yeah, but
I got two matrons in this episode. Wow.
Yeah, there are the very end of the film. We discover, of course, the killer has survived, and he's driving the ambulance with the surviving teenagers in it. In a typical late 80s horror shock ending,
and nobody bats an eyelid that that he's in full makeup.
Why is Julian Clary driving our ambulance?
Yeah.
There's also that, it's the scene where they're all like in front of the store, like trying to get help. And I'm like, where is this furniture store at? Because this street is like, it really is like deserted. Like, what is there, like a homeless guy outside?
Yeah.
While they're all trying to get his attention.
And conveniently, the store has been fitted with shatterproof glass, so yes. You can't get out.
Yes.
Yeah. How convenient. Anything else to say on Hide and Go Shriek before we get into background? Very brief background. Well, for me, it's...
I like that the abbreviation is HAGS.
Yes, as we discovered this week. Yeah, HAGS is the abbreviation. Hide and Go Shriek. Or it was known over here as Close Your Eyes and Pray, which probably isn't as good. It's C-A-E-A-P. No, that doesn't make a proper word. Mm. Okay, will we go on to background then?
Yes.
Yeah. It was released in the UK initially as "Close Your Eyes and Pray," cut by 50 seconds, and I imagine a lot of that was the decapitation scene and the scene of Sean being thrown onto the spikes. Incidentally, what were the spikes? It was some kind of ornamental thing, I assume. Was it?
I guess so. It'd be something dangerous to keep in your house, I would think.
I think it would. Yeah. Although, if you have it up high, the chances are you're not going to fall on it. Yeah, it was released as Close Your Eyes and Pray in 1988, then resurfaced on DVD, on a DVD 4 film set, probably on one disc, with Dolly Dearest, Inner Sanctum 2 and Dark Breed in 2004. But at this stage, all the cuts were waived, so it was released uncut in 2004. But I imagine the print would have been pretty shoddy. You know, looking at the DVD sleeve didn't look terribly, good. It was filmed in an abandoned warehouse in downtown LA in the summer of 1987. It took 3 weeks to shoot. Screaming Mad George, as I said, did the makeup effects. And he's kind of disappeared. He was actually kind of a bit of a star in the late 80s. He did very elaborate and imaginative effects for Society, which would be one of my favorite movies. Nightmare on Elm Street 4 as well, Freaked, Bride of Reanimator. Very, very unusual latex effects he sort of specialized in, which you don't really see in Hide and Go Shriek. But that effect with the decapitation, I thought, was incredible because I was convinced I was looking at the real actress and I said, okay, it's going to cut away any second now and then cut back to her head being chopped off. But no, it just continues going. And I said, oh, what a sort of, authentic looking head for a late 80s movie. Skip Skulnick, as you were saying, is the director, and he was an editor on Halloween 2. His name would be very familiar to me because I watch Halloween 2 so much. But
he also goes by Stuart Skulnick.
Yes, Stuart is his birth name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Can you be christened Skip? I think Skip is more of a nickname, is it? No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that's a nickname. Yeah.
Mm. This is his only film as such. He went on to direct in television, including Angel, but he works mainly as a producer now. Jeff Levine, who plays Fred, also has a Nightmare on Elm Street connection. He worked. He was an extra more or less in Nightmare on Elm Street 4. The Dream Master as a paramedic, and he was in the first Elm Street movie as well as the coroner. Donna Baldwin plays Prudy Judy. She was in 1987's Shallow Grave, which is a film I haven't seen, but you've reviewed on Hysteria Lives, Justin. I don't know if you can remember. Is it any good or is it any bad?
I think it's quite a good little film, actually.
Yes, yeah. It is really good. Mm.
She was also in Bloodbath and Psychotown, so she's got a trifecta of slasher films.
Yeah, I've never seen that one either. Is that one any good?
I don't really remember it.
It's not as good, but I still love it.
And Nathan would actually like this. She's a Madeline's body double in Death Becomes Her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Which one was Madeline? Meryl Streep or...
Madeline was Meryl Streep.
Goldie Hawn. Goldie Hawn.
All right.
No. Madeline was Meryl Streep. Goldie Hawn was Helen.
Yeah, that's right. She was Meryl Streep's body double.
Oh. The wonderfully named Bunky Jones, who plays big-haired Bonnie, of course, who says the immortal line, "I don't understand." And she put her big hair to great use as an extra in some episodes of Dynasty. You know, it's where her hair belonged.
That is where her hair belongs.
Yes. As you said, Sean Kanan went on to play the villain in Karate Kid 3, which is probably my least favorite of the Karate Kid movies. But
still. Oh, it's my favorite because it's so awful.
I know, but I'd say it's still a bit of a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The film is known in Italy as doppio delitto, which translates into English as double murder, which makes no sense, really, to me. And that's all the background, really, I have on Hide and Go Shriek, I'm afraid. Justin, you're usually good for a bit of old research, as we'd say in Ireland.
Yes. Well, you know, we were discussing about the films listed as being 1987 or 1988.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I've got the original one sheet for the film's release in America, and it's copyrighted. On the poster it says 1987. So my review was right, Eric. I think you agree, don't you?
You're always right, Justin.
I'm always
right. How could I ever doubt the wonderful Justin? Ooh.
So anyway, I just want to point that out. But yeah, the film was shot in the summer of 1987. Did you mention it, where it was shot, Eric? You didn't, did you?
Just all I got was an abandoned warehouse in downtown LA.
Yes. And did you mention about Annette Sinclair, who played Kim, having to paint her own face?
No.
For decapitation?
Yes. No, I didn't say that, yeah.
Yeah, but she worked with Screaming Mad George. He asked her to do the makeup on the head, on her own head, as it were, to be severed so it would match her head. The writer of the movie, Michael Kelly, who may be a Mo, we don't know, but he made a brief cameo in the film as a wino outside the store, the one who doesn't hear them hammering on the window.
Why do you think he's a Mo?
Well, because Joseph was saying that somebody associated with the film...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so keep up, Eric.
Yeah, I know, it's just there's too many interweaving themes and plots going on in this podcast.
I know, okay. It's kind of like, it's like an episode of Dynasty, isn't it?
It's multi-layered, yeah.
Yes,
it's like
indeed.
It's like Pulp Fiction.
Absolutely. So the... where else have we got... the film, I think, was also released again as Hide and Go Shriek in February of 1988... and then got a video release in America in April 1988 for the princely sum of $79.95. So can you imagine back in 1988 how much that actually would have been? It would have been quite a lot, wouldn't it?
Probably as much as you spend on posters. Oh, sorry, I'm not meant to say that, am I?
Shh, Eric, no, be quiet. I think, the only other thing I've got, I just found, is somebody questioned why the film's not been released on DVD or had a proper release, really. And apparently they say that the person who owns the rights to these movies, or this movie, wants far too much money for it, which is kind of a common thing, which is kind of just going back to Prom Night and Curtains. I think they're both owned by the same people, and I think one of the reasons, which is maybe Mill Creek or whoever, it didn't get a decent release. They kind of hold on to these films and not sell them on, but they have sold this on eventually. So maybe Hide and Go Shriek could be on one of, you know, Scream Factory have started doing their four movie Blu-rays or DVDs, haven't they?
Yes, so, they've had a legal snafu with the one that was supposed to come first. The one with the vagrant on it, and it has Schizoid, which is the US version of Lizard in a Woman's Skin, that they've had a problem with that title, so they've had to replace it with something else, which means that
you know, in a bizarre twist, volume two of that series is going to come out before volume one.
Yes, but I think the Schizoid or the Lizard in Woman's Skin is kind of is the one that held it up, wasn't it? But
yeah,
but,
it is. Yeah.
Shriek, Shriek Show put that out, didn't they? On DVD, not that
they
long
did.
Ago,
yeah, about a couple of years ago, and then I
well,
think
then they should put this out, Hide and Go Shriek Show.
Yeah,
very good.
Yes. The last thing I've got to say was that I think I've got the American video. Is that the one you've got, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah? Have you got
it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, Justin.
Well, I've got it here. This is my, if you can probably hear it, that's my actual physical copy.
Here's my one here. There, okay, that's my one.
Right. Yeah. And it says on the front, it's got unrated version, contains footage too shocking for theatrical release.
Yeah.
And so, which obviously was probably just a decapitation, I would imagine.
They say, I think it was on IMDb, it said it's just 2 seconds of the decapitation is what qualifies the unrated release.
Right. Okay. And you did try and find some people. We found people, didn't we, associated with this, but nobody wanted to talk about it, did they?
Mm. Yeah, or else they just don't look at Facebook.
Yes.
One or the other, yes.
Well, we did try and... we're looking, because obviously the person we wanted to speak to probably mostly was Bunky Jones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
I just love that name.
It's a great name, isn't it? And the only Bunky Jones I could find on Facebook was a slightly larger lady. And so I'm not sure if that was her or not. It's difficult to know, because it's made, what, 27 years or something? 26 years ago?
26 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so people change, don't they?
Mm-hmm. They certainly do. 26 years ago, I was X number of years old, and I had spiky hair and a mullet. And I actually would have fitted in quite nicely to Hide and Go Shriek.
Yeah. Well, that's me done. That's me spent, Eric.
Okay, guys, do you have anything further? Joseph, Nathan?
The only thing I had was, I'd already mentioned about the character of Randy was also in Slumber Party Massacre 3. That's all I had.
Which will probably... We haven't done any Slumber Party Massacre films yet, have we? No.
No, so, but hey, in September, I'm going to meet several people from the Slumber Party Massacre.
Oh, ooh. From the
just
first
convention.
Of just the first film or of all of them?
Just the first one.
Oh, right. Are you going as well, Joseph?
Yes, I am.
Oh, awesome.
Do you reckon you might be able to get some kind of interviews or a little soundbite?
I'll try.
Hmm. Maybe so.
Hmm. And I actually did have a lot of background information on this, but Eric went through every bit I had, so I
yeah. Well, you probably went to the same source as I did, which I think was either Wikipedia or IMDb.
Yeah, there's really not much out there. No.
Can I say the director's name? Skip Skulnick sounds like something from Revenge of the Nerds. No offense to him. I'm just saying the name kind of sounds like it.
Now, there is a reference to Revenge of the Nerds. Sean Kanan, who went on to be in Karate Kid 3 and General Hospital, someone else in the film. Actually, it was him. I'm sorry. He went in to be Revenge of the Nerds 3, I believe. He was one of the bullies, I think. So there you go.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Is there anything else we want to say about Hide and Go Shriek, Eric, before we move on to some feedback?
I urge you all to seek out Hide and Go Shriek.
Thank you.
There, you see?
That was very nice.
And
that was very
I guess I'll just,
I'm Poet Laureate for The Hysteria Continues.
Mm-hmm. I guess just the last kind of thing about Hide and Go Shriek is I'll just say, oh, yeah.
Well, when you do that, it turns me on.
Oh, dear. Nathan, have you got anything to maybe a bucket of cold water?
Like hags.
Okay, right.
Like hags, yeah.
Right. Well, I think we'll move on to our feedback. But before we do that, here's the contact details on how to reach us.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay. Joseph, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I have a couple here. This is from Cameron Perry, who disappeared off Facebook. Come back, Perry. We like you. He says, good day from down under, guys. It's Cameron Perry here. I haven't dropped you guys a line for a while, And upon hearing the call to action last week in regard to the next recording time, as well as not wanting to end up on Eric's increasingly infamous to-do list, loved Justin's worried voice. Nice throwback to a previous ep. I thought I'd write in. Was a little disappointed in Joseph last week, dissing Police Academy 2 and not instantly recognizing the "not on broccoli, not on cauliflower" line. Agreed, Eric. Awesome scene. The fish is boiling. Oh, you want stir fry? Okay.
That's another Police Academy 2 reference, yes.
Yeah. See, I don't like... I like some of the Police Academy movies, but 2 I did not like. Anyway... that and the introduction of Bobcat Goldthwait to the world made my Police Academy 2 a pretty worthy sequel. Not until 4 did the series again shoot for the top, but a discussion for another time. Great work on the Sleepaway Camp show. Loved the Cat Bitch remix. Sleepaway Camp, not a big favorite of mine, but the show was great regardless. I may be one of the only semi-fans of Return to Sleepaway Camp, which I thought was... better than part 3, by which time I thought they had...
Yeah. Somebody get smelling salts for Nathan.
Yes. Yeah. By which time I thought they had run out of steam. Alan's signature quote, "Your ass stinks," is genius. I'd have to disagree there. Just wanted to share something I read regarding Friday the 13th part 2 on one of the IMDb threads that piqued my interest, as I'd never thought of it before. And what I'm about to read, I think everyone has thought of before. No offense, Cameron, but he says, "The suggestion was made that Jenny may have been having that time of the month, and that is what was meant by the beware of bears message to Paul, making reference to his earlier warning of bears and for the girls to keep clean during their menstrual cycles. It would also answer what Jenny was going to tell Paul just before Crazy Ralph is killed. What do you guys think?" And me personally, I've heard that kind of theory. Yeah. Several times, but anyway.
Well, I think you should always keep away from bears.
Yes.
No, I think you should always go near them.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Eric, do you like to... Do you steal people's picnic baskets?
Well, yeah, if they're full of Twixes, yeah.
I bet you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Stealing my picnic basket.
If they're full of cucumber sandwiches, no. If it's full of chocolate, yes.
Good chow. Good chow. Anyway, I'll keep it brief. Just wanted to say hi and to say good luck to the U.S. guys regarding getting The Night Before Easter off the ground. I, for one, enjoyed their one-off show. Not only did it fill the void, but was a little looser in format, a night's filler. Oh, by the way, are you guys a little disappointed in the Scream Factory specs for Hospital Massacre and Schizoid? Not as good as some of their releases, but hey, that can only work with what's around. Talk soon, guys. Cameron Perry.
Well, thank you, Cameron. It's always good to hear from you. So, I to be honest, I haven't really looked at the specs for Hospital Massacre, and
I wouldn't be expecting too much extras on titles like that, to be honest.
If I can be slightly controversial here, I think it's great when DVDs, you know, like, or companies put out, you know, all these older movies on DVD, and it's great that they clean up the picture and everything, but that just doesn't matter that much to me. What matters is extras, and if I don't see extras, I'm kind of bummed out. Mm. That's me. I'm an extras guy.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Now, I mean, I've got a record player recently, and it's a little mono kind of record player, and I'm listening to music on that, and it's going back to almost like kind of quite lo-fi. So when I was watching, like I'm sure Eric must have had this as well, when he's watching his original VHS yesterday recently. It was full of snow and it started to roll and stuff like that. And before, in the 80s, that would have really annoyed me. But now it's quite nostalgic.
Yes.
So yeah. It's kind of a weird thing with that. So I agree. I mean, it's great sometimes. And certainly, you know, we've seen some films cleaned up. But I do, you know, I do really want to see good extras behind it. And sometimes when a film's really cleaned up, like the original Evil Dead, actually it works better on a quite fuzzy kind of nth generation VHS in some ways, when you can't see the joins and the makeup and things. It just kind of, sometimes it works better. So yeah,
I can understand if you cannot find any extras, but DVD and Blu-ray especially, they're a format that just kind of, they have the room for extras, and so there's really no excuse if you have access to extras to not, you know, include them.
Well, and you know, there was the story about Anchor Bay, you remember long time ago. They were the first to release House on Sorority Row on DVD. And Mark Rosman, you know, said that nobody contacted him at all about any kind of extras for that release. And he's not that hard to find. I mean, you know, we got an interview with him. So, you know, I'm like, if they put the work into it, I'm sure you could find extras for some things. I'm not saying, you know, that they didn't put work in extras for Hospital Massacre or anything. I'm just saying that there are cases where more could be done.
Yeah, at the very least, they can just get us doing a commentary.
Yes, I mean, if we offer, and they should...
We'll do it for free.
Yes, I mean, and that's... And not everybody may want to listen to our commentary, but still, some people do. So, I mean, what does it hurt to put that on there?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yes.
On the subject of Bobcat Goldthwaite, he's appearing at Fright Fest, I think, isn't he, Justin? This year in London. I think he has a short movie showing.
Who?
Because he's a director now. Bobcat Goldthwaite.
Yeah, he is a great director.
He's a really good writer as well. He's
the
really
guy
sharp.
With the funny voice from 80s comedy movies, particularly Police Academy 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, right.
No?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's just an aside. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you, Cameron. Who would like to go next?
I'll go next. Okay, good evening, or afternoon as it is now. My name is Mike Tomlinson from London, and I have discovered your inimitable podcast over the last month. As someone who believes how important it is to have a passion in life, can I say an enormous thank you for your work here, as I am a relative newcomer to the
cucumber.
Sorry.
Cucumber. Oh, Eric. Insulting our new listeners.
To the slasher obsession, despite my 40 years. I was always utterly seduced by the covers in the horror section of my local video store in the mid-80s, but regrettably missed out on seeing these classics at the cinema due to age. As a result, I've long been a horror fan, but have always tended to go with what's new, and it is only as middle age has now started to set in that I've begun a route of nostalgia for the films that shaped the world of the horror movie from yesteryear. I discovered your podcast as a result of an IMDb link on Girls Night Out, for which I have a particular fondness for, and therefore was thrilled to hear your episode on this. As I have said, I'm a relative new here, so haven't listened to all, but I'm working my way through steadily. Can I also thank you at this point for introducing me to Lake Mungo, a film I'd never heard of until you talked about it, and which I watched for the first time last night. I thought it was truly unsettling and was kind of visceral experience and was the kind... Let me start that sentence again. I thought it was truly unsettling and was the kind of visceral experience that you crave for when watching a scary movie and yet so seldom experience nowadays. I've been desperately trying to think of top three ideas and have come up with three, although I'm worried may or have already done them. In which case, I apologize, but as I said, I haven't yet listened to all of the podcasts. So here are Mike Tomlinson's suggestions for top threes. Number one, Final Girl Fight Back top three. I know you've done a top three Final Girl, but what about the Fight Back itself? Those Final Girls who turn the tables on the killer most effectively.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. That is good.
Yeah.
The second one is quite good as well, actually, here. The top three best tragic events. What I mean by this is that most slashers have the ingredient of there being some sort of tragic event that sets the killer off. For example, Jason drowning, the dumping of Dickie Kavanaugh, the Harry Warden mining incident, the tragic death of Robin in Prom Night, etc. So, yeah, that's a good idea for top three.
Yeah,
I think, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And his third suggestion is the top three whodunit. Okay, slashers aren't meant to be Prime Suspect or Broadchurch, but I wondered if you had a best three for the final reveal, Scooby-Doo style. Even if you guessed the killer, those that were the most convincing. Well, have we done anything like that?
I think we've done a killer reveal. I don't remember. We've done so many goddamn episodes, I can't remember.
Motives.
I know.
Didn't we do motives?
Yeah.
Yes.
But as far as like whodunit, as far as like keeping the whodunit, you know, really, you know, well thought out, I don't think we've done that. And if we haven't, then I already know my number one and Nathan knows it, so Nathan can't pick it.
Okay.
I think it'd be hard to pick like whodunits because I don't know.
Yeah, I guess a lot of them, but I'm sure there's probably three that I could say, you know, did a good job of keeping me guessing.
Anyway, Mike,
Tomlinson goes on to say, again, apologies if you've done these already, but I have to send a feedback now, as lying in my garden in this post-Wimbledon scorching weather with you four on my headphones is my 2013 summer. Thanks again, and I'm spreading the word about Hysteria Continues to all I know who enjoy the much maligned and therefore memorable slasher movie. Much love from Michael Tomlinson in London, which is a city in the south of the UK.
Thanks, yes. Michael.
Thank you. No, it's great to hear from you listeners. Yeah. And so hopefully, when you get back to the Bloody Moon episode, was it Bloody Moon or the Peters episode? It was a big kind of cluster.
The Bloody Moon episode was the one that took about 6 or 7 hours to record due to technical difficulties.
And we all went a bit mental, didn't we?
We did. Yeah. Much like
that,
Bloody Moon
itself.
That
was fun, actually. That was kind of fun the way it turned out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Yes.
Nathan, do you want to go next?
Sure. This is from Ginny Cameron, and it's spelled Ginny like, Virginia.
Oh, like Ginny in Friday the 13th Part 2.
And happy birthday to me.
Oh.
It says, hi, guys. I've been a fan of Justin's site since it seems like forever. I was wanting information on Twilight Goodnight, a movie that was quite elusive, but YouTube later and all its darkness got me a watch. By looking for the movie, I fell in love with Justin's site. Someone else knew of these movies other than me and the people I coerce into watching them with me. Awesome. I recently got the chance to be an extra in a movie called The Sacrament. It was directed by, is it T or Ty West?
T.
Ty.
T.
Is it Ty?
I thought it was Ty West.
I'd say Ty, but I've never heard it said, so.
I haven't either, so I'm just guessing.
Whichever pronouncement it is, West. To pass time, I'd listen to the podcast. I hope I didn't crack up too much with the...
You just cracked up
in the woods with, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. It says, I hope I didn't crack up too much with Don't Go in the Woods with the I'm sorry scene. The movie was filmed less than 2 miles from my house, and I live in the same county as Savannah and Tybee Island, where The Slayer was filmed.
Yay.
Mm.
My husband helped me in my dorkism by freezing a frame where the plane is overheard and comparing it to Google Maps. It was neat. Well, just wanted to drop a line and say I love your show and ha-ha cheesy goodness time with 30-plus-year-olds playing high schoolers and hide-and-go-shriek is next. I believe one person we said was in her 50s. That's what Erica Justin said.
I think I was exaggerating a bit, but she certainly didn't look 18. Yeah.
I thought of a top three. Forgive me if it's been done already, but top three worst reasons for being the killer. I think you've done this one, though, because I think I remember one of you talking about the stupid motive for this very movie, Hide and Go Shriek. And another top three would be the best reveal of victims. You know, Happy Birthday to Me is one for sure. A dork side note is it's cool to have leads with the name Jenny spelled my way. Friday the 13th Part 2 is another one as well. Well, keep up the good work, guys, and I'll get back to my job as agent for Dana, a.k.a. Dana, for some of you, Kimmel, and Bob Hoskins.
Eric's pricked up.
Yeah.
What does she mean by reveal of victims? What does she mean by that?
I guess when the final girl, finds all the victims.
Oh, okay.
Debbie in Part 3 is my number one.
Part 3
Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Keep up the good work, guys, and I'll get back to my job as agent for Dana, Kimmel, and Bob Hoskins. I thought a movie with them two as leads would be great. Just kidding, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
But I'm sure you got a nanosecond of pleasure from the suggestion. Thanks again for...
Oh, yeah.
Shut up. Thanks again for great podcasts, you bastards. Jenny Cameron.
Thank you, Ginny. That's lovely to hear from you, and it's good to hear that there's some kind of people, the slasher nerdiness akin to our own. I think it's always good to hear from people. I'm in awe that you would have matched up a Google Earth thing over where Don't Go Into the Woods was filmed. I think that's quite.
Or was it The Slayer?
Oh, The Slayer, sorry. Yeah, well, either one, it's still pretty good, isn't it?
The Farmer Vincent on the Body Count Continues forums, he actually had a thread where he actually traveled. He pulled up Google Maps of all these slasher movie locations, and he posted pictures of what they look like today. I think if you go on the site, it's somewhere way, way back in the archives somewhere. But he has all these pictures from Google Maps of all these slasher movie locations. So if you want to see stuff like that, check it out.
Mm. Yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ginny. Oops, oh, sorry, I've just lost my headphones popped out there for a second. So shall I go next?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes, you
should. Well, we've got an email here from Cabe Gaplin, the honey-voiced... What?
It's Cabe, the guy with the honey voice.
Yes. Yeah. So unfortunately, you're going to have to put up with me talking rather than him. But howdy, gents. Just finished watching the Mill Creek Blu-ray of Happy Birthday to Me. My first ever Blu-ray purchased. I enjoyed it like I always do, and it made me think of the long, strange, and therefore wonderful road your podcast has travelled on these 2+ years. Why? Just in the last 3 months, you've taken us to a world where dogs have flashbacks, British people think they're American high school students, and a college campus is terrorised by Psycho in a bear costume that only a plushie could love, or Eric. Oh, and that Italians have enormous meat lockers and massive dune buggies. That's true. So, yes, it's been a strange journey.
Yeah.
This world never quite tells us if the Phantom of the Mall is also the Phantom of the Mall, nor does it settle the debate over whether Predator is a slasher or not. Only thing I know for certain about this crazy mixed-up world is that young women in the 80s really, really liked men who looked like the Grim Reaper from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
What's that reference?
Yeah, what is
Bill
that reference?
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. It's William Sadler plays the Reaper, and he's pale and he's all white and
I know that, but what how does it relate to a slasher movie?
I don't know. I think it's funny that they mentioned Bill and Ted the Reaper from Bill. I like that movie. So there.
We're confused, Kate, but maybe it will come clear. Hold on. And it says and that Angela's a boy.
I know. Well, I think we spoiled that last week anyway. So.
We did, yes. And he says, I hope you all will continue to be the excellent guides to this world that you are, and you never run out of interesting places to explore. Although I know if you're tapped out, so to speak, if I look on iTunes and see your latest podcast as a double bill of Axum and Detour, which I'm sure you'll get around to eventually, Nathan, won't you?
Yeah.
I'm sure I will.
Yeah. He also says, I'm very excited about The Night Before Easter. I think you'll reach your goal, no matter how you feel about the metaphorical glass, and the production will, with blood, sweat and tears, it'll turn out just fine. Can't wait to hear all the gory details about all the steps you're taking along the way towards your epic slasher film, Cabe Gaplin. So thank you, Cabe. It's always a pleasure to hear from you.
I wish I had his enthusiasm about the goal. It's at a standstill right now. So, but you know, thanks for the encouragement.
Well, yes. I mean, it's kind of me and Eric we're kind of watching this, aren't we, from afar, as it were,
yes.
Of Nathan and Joseph's dream. And so, but you know, you should, if you're listening to this, please do support them, because at the moment you don't have to give, you know, you pledge the money, but the money won't be taken unless the goal's reached. So even if you won't have any money for the next 3 or 4 weeks, it doesn't really matter, because it's not going to be taken until that goal's reached. And I think you've heard, you know, the passion for the slasher movie from both of them. So please do support them. It's a worthy cause. And also,
we have one, guys. It's a dollar.
Yeah,
it's a dollar. Come on, everybody can afford a dollar.
If everyone just on Justin's Facebook page alone pledged a dollar, we'd probably reach our goal. We have 3 weeks left. You know, not to sound like a Spike Lee here, but just, you know, help us make our dreams come true.
Exactly. Yes, please do that. And also remember, if it turns out that it's awful, it's nothing to do with me and Eric. But
well, you have producer credit, so you're part of the party.
We got Alan Smithy again.
Yeah, Alan Smithy. No, I'm sure it'll be wonderful. It'll be wonderful. Mm-hmm. But please make it happen, because I think these two guys know what makes a fun slasher movie, and that's what they're trying to make. So if you want to see those again, you know, you've only got yourself to blame if it doesn't get the full funding. So, you know, make it happen.
Well, I just want to say that we are going to make this movie regardless, but this goal we're trying to reach is the amount that we need to go through the list of everything we want to do. So please, even if it's just a dollar, that would greatly help a lot. And there are lots of great incentives if you pledge. You get a lot of prizes, a lot of merchandise, things of that nature, credits in the film, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you again, Cabe. And Joseph, I think you've got one more, haven't you?
Yeah, I have one more. This is from Alex. He says, "Hi, guys. Still loving the show. Been a listener since the beginning, and you guys go from strength to strength. Just wanted to share a couple of thoughts about the last couple of episodes." excuse me. You probably already know this, but harking back to Justin's top three movies that would make good slasher films, 976 Evil Part 2 has an It's a Wonderful Life sequence. The finale of the film plays up to the bell ringing on the Christmas tree. Then Zuzu, the little girl, says, "Every time you hear a bell, a demon drags us all to hell. And instead of friends and neighbors coming through the door, it's swarms of zombies." Kind of cool. One of Justin's top threes coming true, sort of.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. I have to look out for that.
Yeah. Eric made me laugh in the Sleepaway Camp episode by giving us a careful warning that here be spoilers. Yet a couple of episodes back, when Nathan chose Angela as one of his top three killers, he girlishly chortled, "Angela's got a woohoo." So your your warning came too late for the Sleepaway Camp virgins who saw this episode, fella. Also, I would love to know how it feels to watch Texas Chainsaw 3D without knowing the final girl does a turnabout. Guess I never will. Thanks, guys. So I guess we spoiled that for him. Sorry. But we do say we are going to spoil things, so you only have yourself, your ears to blame. Sorry.
Exactly.
Finally, just wanted to pick Justin or Eric's brains for a moment. Do either of you guys remember a play made for British TV many years back that was totally slasher-esque? It was about a reunion of now elderly showgirls all being offed one by one. The death I remember was one old girl hiding from the killer in a dumbwaiter, but the killer cuts the rope, plunging her to a messy end. I think there were dolls that were broken after every death, and then there were none. I had a feeling it was called Staircase to Paradise, but I can't find anything about it. We are talking 80s, I think. Any ideas?
Doesn't ring a bell with me.
The dumbwaiter scene rings a very large bell with me. Because I remember seeing something as a child where a woman is hiding in the dumbwaiter and somebody cuts the rope. But I have no
idea. This sounds interesting. I'd like to see this myself.
Yeah, and now it was kind of a shot for TV thing, so it has the same look as, you know, something like Abigail's Party. It has that kind of, you know, late, I think it was probably late 70s, early 80s shot for TV look. But I do remember that, like, I haven't even thought about that for so many years. It just came, that memory came flooding back as you were reading it out.
Well, if anyone out there knows, write to us so we can answer his question. Yeah.
Because there is that short film, isn't it, with Geraldine Page or whatever. I can't remember.
It's called The Dumbwaiter, isn't it?
Called The Dumbwaiter, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not that, it's only about 5 minutes long or 5-10 minutes long. And
that is a very good short film, by the way, if you haven't seen that.
That's very good.
And he says, anyway, keep up the good work. Love you guys, Alex.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's great to hear from new people, especially, you know, people I haven't written before. So hopefully we'll be able to find out what that particular film is. Eric, you should go back and you should get some, you know, therapy or whatever, so you can go back into your childhood.
Yes, regression therapy.
Regression therapy, yes, yeah, so we can find out what it is.
I'm interested in this because it may have been Nathan who said he wanted to do a slasher film with a lot of old people, like in an old folks home. So
yeah,
this sounds like this sounds like a bunch of old people, and I think it sounds kind of interesting.
Okay. I've got one more as well. This is from Bill Ackerman in Philadelphia. He says, "To Nathan, Eric, Joseph, and Justin, thank you kindly for reading my previous overlong email on the air. It's both thrilling and a little surreal to hear your name spoken on your favorite podcast while driving to work. I had a few comments to add. Nathan, I have been really enjoying your Axe to Grind podcast, especially the initial one with Amanda by Night on made-for-TV movies. You two should really consider co-hosting a regular series just on that subject, or perhaps bring her on The Hysteria Continues if you plan to have any further guests."
We do, actually, and she is slated for some time soon, hopefully.
Yes, because we're very fond of Amanda by Night here on History Continues, I think. Justin, you can count me among the fans of Teenage Wasteland, and yes, I have it under the original title. Is there another book in the works, perhaps something on Jolly?
I'd love to. I haven't got time at the moment to, although I have been in touch because it's actually sold out in the UK. So now going for some silly money on Amazon. So I have approached the original publishers with a view of expanding it as an ebook. Updating and expanding it and trying to do something interesting. I don't know if they'll go with it. I mean, I did want to do a book on Final Girls. That was the idea, but I'm not sure whether that's going to happen or not. It's I'm really wanting to try. I mean, obviously put a lot of most of my energy, as we all four of us are, into the podcast, and also trying to get more back into doing stuff on Hysteria Lives. So I don't know, never say never, we shall see. But it'd be fun to do an expanded version of Teenage Wasteland, because the original manuscript was 10,000 words longer than that was published. So so I would definitely like to revisit that and do a lot more, not hugely in depth, but certainly go into a lot more stuff that was cut out for the book. So yeah,
groovy. Nathan, Justin, Eric, please pressure Joseph into writing the definitive book on found footage horror films. I can think of no other candidate more qualified. He's already doing the research out of sheer love for the subgenre, and the need for a good reference book is clearly there. I know I'd buy a copy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do have to say, I do love found footage films, but, you know, trying to be a filmmaker now, I don't really think I'd ever have the time to sit down and write something like that. Mm. But if I ever did a book, I think that would be a good idea, because there is no books on found footage films.
Mm. And there's so much to write about as well, so.
Yeah.
Where am I now? He says, it's funny contemporary horror films, by and large, don't bring me the same pleasures as those made in the 1970s and 1980s, but it feels like we're presently living in some kind of golden age in terms of content for fans of the films from those eras. It seems like there are an increasing number of books, repertory, theatrical screenings, speciality DVD labels, conventions, zines, magazines, and podcasts like yours, all done by smart... I'm just laughing because I don't consider myself smart. All done by smart, committed enthusiasts of the genre.
Well, the four of you... sorry? Given the quiz, Eric...
That's what I was about to say. Obviously, the quiz proves that right.
Yes.
That's also an insult to me.
Well, I know you're dumb, so it doesn't really matter.
I'm smarter than you. I know all the states in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
All right.
No, thank you.
Yeah, can actually, you speak Irish, Justin? No, you can't speak Irish. I can.
Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado. I'm not going into the rest.
Because you don't know them. You know, you studied the very beginning.
I've proven my point.
Thank you.
Can you say all of the presidents in 1 second like I can?
That was just a loud yelping noise, Peter.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's carry on.
There's more to this podcast, but in terms of repertory, theatrical screenings, we had, I didn't go to them, but in Dublin we had Toxic Avenger on Friday night, and last night they had Pink Flamingos. If I lived near the city, I probably would have gone, but they were on quite late, so. Now let's see, what else does Bill have to say? Where did I leave you off? The four of you have been horror film lovers for some time now. Do you feel that this is a better era to be a fan, or do you feel nostalgic for the days when finding a film like Girls' Night Out or Savage Weekend, let alone any uncut giallo, took a bit more effort? Before eBay and YouTube and the baby Jesus made it much easier to find the buried treasures. Do you ever miss when certain slashers carried a certain mystique in the pre-internet days? Just curious on your take.
God, yes. I mean, and Nathan and I have talked about this. We miss the thrill of the hunt, going to video stores and picking up, you know, movies that you... The only thing you have to go by is reading the back of the box or looking at the box art. And, you know, the internet, you know, it's a huge resource for, you know, finding these movies, but it'll never replicate that feeling of just blindly picking something and hoping for the best.
Yeah, well, I have to say, for myself, I would not be able to do this podcast if we still lived in those times, because I grew up in a small town in Ireland, and we had a good few video stores in the town, but it took me years to see something like, as I said last week, Sleepaway Camp under the title Nightmare Vacation was never available in my town, and you know, there were quite big titles like, just could never get hold of. You couldn't get Halloween. You get Halloween 2, Halloween 3 in a really cut version, but you couldn't get Halloween. So I mean, the internet was a godsend for me, to be honest. The thrill of the hunt, I can understand, but for me personally, I need the internet, and I need DVDs, I need Amazon, Baby Jesus, all that. So.
Well, I think we've all learned to adapt, so I mean, you're no worse for the wear, I guess.
Mm.
I mean, for me, it's a mixed bag, because I think it's we are living in a bit of a golden age as far as everything being available, and I think it's only going to get more so, you know, with the internet. I mean, where is it going to end? You know, you're going to be, you know, we're going to get to a point where everything is going to be available all the time, you know. But I do miss the thrill of the chase. You know, I was say at the boot fair, which is kind of like a big garage sale, but in a field. I'm not sure quite what you call them in the States, but
flea market.
But yeah, but it's people selling stuff out the back of their cars, so they have tables, and it's all sorts of old shite. And but it's but used to be, and I haven't used to be when I used to go to them about 10-15 years ago. They were, you'd always spot like old what we call pre-certs, which is kind of the videos that were released before the Video Nasty debacle. So before they had certificates, and there would always be one or two of them knocking around, and you pick up all sorts of things. I mean, I remember going to a boot fair, and there'd be there's all these Cannibal films, you know, all the banned Cannibal films. I was just selling 50p on the carpet. Things like
that.
You
found Savage Water at a boot fair, didn't you?
I did find Savage Water at a boot fair, yeah. So I missed that. You know, you'd never see those at boot fairs now. I mean, there's loads of videos, but it's all kind of crap, like, you know, Pretty Woman and Dirty Dancing and stuff like that. So
yeah,
there's nothing.
Oi!
So I do miss the thrill of the chase. But having said that, you've got fantastic companies like Arrow and Synapse and Screen Factory putting stuff out now. So it's, you know, it's a mixture. But yeah, it's you know, it's the whole weird thing of watching Hiding Go Shriek and seeing all the snow and thinking, is it about to descend into? Is the tape going to be chewed up? Is it going to descend into complete unwatchability? And actually thinking that's charming rather than annoying, which I would have done 20 years ago. So yeah, it's a mixed bag.
What about you, Nathan?
I agree.
Okay, good.
Well, Nathan, you didn't grow up in Chattanooga, did you? You were in a smaller town, or?
Yeah, I grew up in a very small town, but they had amazing video stores.
Mm.
I mean, the video stores, like, Joseph, you saw one of them, Chatsworth Sales.
I saw a few of them, actually. One of them is actually still open, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was one of the smaller ones. But it's still open. She still rents VHS.
Wow.
Well, I remember very fondly is that there'd just be hundreds and hundreds of videos. I mean, not all horror, obviously, but just, you know, you could spend days in there just browsing happily. And yep. I do kind of miss that, but you know, films that I longed to see after reading about them that I just couldn't get. I don't miss that feeling.
Yeah, for me, I love the internet. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, I'll never be able to replicate that feeling in my heart when you walk into this video store and you go to the horror section and there's like thousands of these videos just lined up, and you see the art and you're like, oh my god, and you beg these people to sell these tapes to you, and they won't, and now they're actually going for these insane prices on like eBay and stuff.
Yeah, anyway, Bill finishes off by saying, I hope Eric is feeling he says, anyway, thanks again for the great show. I hope Eric is feeling fully recovered from his recent surgery, which I am, thank you very much. The Sleepaway Camp episode was well worth the wait. Looking forward to the discussion of Hide and Go Shriek. And it's all the best from Bill Ackerman in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is my favorite cream cheese. He says that's Philadelphia is where chunky Kit Kats are strangely hard to come by. I know, matron, hard to come by. Yeah, so chunky Kit Kats must be like elusive VHSs in the 80s for me.
Well, we have them here. They're called Big Cats.
Yes, I'm aware what Big Cats are.
They can't be that elusive, Eric.
What?
You can buy them at every shop, can't you?
Chunky Kit Kats. Maybe in the States they're not as
I see. Right.
Prevalent.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. They're just not called chunky here. They're called Big Cats. I don't know about up north, but here, I mean, they're in every little, you know, 7-Eleven on the corner.
Oh. Yes.
Well thank this you, has been Bill. Fascinating talk about Kit Kats.
Yes. Eric would agree.
I would agree. Well, they're not called Big Kit Kats. They're just called Big Cats.
They're not called Big Kit Kats. They're called Big Cats. Yes.
Huh. Okay,
that's an echo on this podcast. Apparently, yeah.
That's our next episode. Is Big Cats?
Yes. Well, so I'm sure Bill would be delighted that we spent most of the time talking about Big Cats off the back of his email. So, but
our big chunkies like Eric.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, Bill.
See, that would be an insult to somebody else, but to a member of the bear community, that's quite a compliment.
Oh yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay, right. Have we got anything else? Are we spent?
We're spent.
Are we going to announce?
So
the next
it's time
episode?
To find out what. Yes.
Yes, in 2 weeks' time, what's going to be the next pick? And Joseph, I believe it's you, isn't it?
Yes, our next pick is a backwoods slasher from the 70s. It's Rituals with Hal Holbrook.
Excellent.
And the guy from Scanners.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence Stane, is that his name?
Yeah, Lawrence Stane.
And the dad from Happy Birthday to Me.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Lots of slasher connections there.
Yes. So we will be coming back in a couple of weeks with that. So I hope you enjoyed our Hide and Go Shriek episode. And commiserations to Eric and Nathan for the quiz. But there's no shame in losing, even as badly as they did.
I just feel sorry for you that you feel the need to brag about it so much, Justin. I just feel sorry for you.
Justin is the champion.
Thank you,
no
Joseph.
Time for losers.
I always knew you were a big queen, Joseph.
Yeah. I have a Freddie Mercury growing on my lip right now.
You better go to the doctor then.
Yes. Radio Gaga.
What's that film where the Tony Curtis one where some woman has a person growing out of her back?
I don't know.
The Manitou. The Manitou.
The Manitou. That's it. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what's going on with
some
you.
Some like it hot. No, I'm just going to try to work it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's probably time before this descends anymore into any more whatever. It's probably time to finish up. So what we're going to play out on? Eric?
Just the end titles music of Hide and Go Shriek. Oh, do you know what we should play? I forgot to play was. The Walk This Way sound-alike that they use in Hide and Go Shriek.
Do you want to play it now?
Yeah, it's just a quick. It's just a quick blast.
Walk
yeah.
This way.
See, that's what you do when you don't have the funding to license a particular song. Is you just get it to sound as close as you can without breaking any legal boundaries. But what we're ending on is the end titles music of Hide and Go Shriek.
Excellent. Right. Well, thanks for listening and see you again next time.
Bye.
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 I am the champion. No matter what anyone says.
There's that weird door again.
Hello, please. Yeah, I'm not sure what to choose on the quiz. 10666 Bristol Road, Bristol.
Bristol Road? That's awesome. And here I thought Justin lived at Three Cocks.
Sorry, I'm only put my headphones back in. What were you saying?
Oh, I said in here I thought Justin lived at Three Cocks.
Yeah, or on St. or Lord Hereford's Knob.
Yeah, that's the... And who's Joey?
Oh, she's my flatmate. I'm completely naked. So she's supposed to be at work, but just in case she came home while the podcast was on, I asked if she was around there because I needed to get a Coke from the fridge.
Are you a nudist?
No, but it's just swelteringly hot in the apartment. We're south-facing, so we get so much sun.
Do you not have AC?
I bet every member of this podcast has done a podcast nude.
I have not, actually.
I'm happy not, yeah.
No, I have not.
I think I have, actually. I don't know what one, though, but...
I'm back.
Wow, you're going to have some great after the show stuff.
Am I? Oh, dear.
Yes.
Well, there's a big fight going on about whether Rawhead Rex is a slasher movie.
Because it's going to be one of my controversial picks later.
And I said I do not think Rawhead Rex is a slasher movie.
Right, okay. Well, I shall listen back to that in a bit.
Oh, what's that noise?
And Eric called the police and Nathan discussed Three Cocks.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so that's what I missed. Excellent. Well, I'm back in the room. I just made myself a sea breeze. So.
Oh. You lush. You're turning into Rebecca
Darnay.
Isn't that a horse?
Yeah, Seabreeze is a horse. That's
Seabiscuit. Oh, okay.
Carter Pewterschmidt's. Wait a minute, that was his dog. Never mind.
No, Seabreeze is vodka and cranberry juice?
Yes, that's right.
So
you better not have defiled my sea breeze.
Right, okay. Anyway, I'm going to stop recording now.
I don't understand.